haters and they hate you. Ignorant and hateful cause they don't understand us. Ban us from living our lives. Second class citizen, give them this right. Bash me, mash me, I bash you back. You're messing with the wrong fact, you're about to get checked. A new generation, we taking our rights. Taking the gay population to new heights. Watch out now, girly boy can fight. Sports and medicine, our rhymes too tight. You can try to diss, but you know the consequences. Payback, I'm the Michael Jordan of the gay rap. Take that, shock my style. Top or bottom, I'm versatile. Two men holding hands, walking down the block. Don't be jealous, cause we're so damn high.
Come on,
let me hear it loud. Young and proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud. Young and proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. Let me hear it loud. Young and proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud. Young and proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. A brand new generation taking over. Freedom fighters, some call us soldiers. Unity between you and I. Sick of being a punchline and crucified. Try to tear us down, but still we rise. I'm sick of the games, I'm sick of the lies. From the gay ghettos to the Malibu mansions, they can't keep us down cause we keep on dancing. Even got the queens switch from disco. Got them all dancing from Greenwich to Frisco. Latino play, papi chulo loco. Number one homo a logo, let's go.
Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound.
A new generation, we taking our rights. Taking the gay population to new heights. From the gay ghetto to the Malibu mansion. They can't keep it down cause we keep on dancing. Sick of the games, sick of the lies. Sick of being a punchline and crucified. Bash me, mash me, I bash you back. You messing with the wrong fag, you about to get jacked. A new generation, we taking our rights. Taking the gay population to new heights. From the gay ghetto to the Malibu mansion. They can't keep us down cause we keep on dancing. Sick of the games, sick of the lies. Sick of being a punchline and crucified. Bash me, mash me, I bash you back. You messing with the wrong fag, you about to get jacked.
Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for your rights, everybody get down. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Stand up for our rights and we march to the sound. Let me hear it loud, young and proud. Young and proud, young and proud.
Warning. The following program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
You have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music dear to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
Hello, Houston, Galveston and the world, and Huntsville, and wherever the hell else we're hearing us at.
We're everywhere. We're everywhere.
This is After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude on KPFT. My name is Chris Harrison. I'll be the co-executive producer for this evening.
And I'm Jimmy Carper. I'm the longest-running co-executive producer of this show.
And I'm Wes Laverne. I'm the guy sitting over here enjoying the damn air conditioning finally.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, we had a hot night.
And it wasn't because there... Well, actually, there were a couple of cute
ones. Yes,
there
was. Yes, there was. Ooh.
So, but yeah. It was a very hot night. Hot afternoon, hot night. Jesus.
I know. It was... well, you'll find out later because Judy is going to... tell all about this evening.
Yes.
And future. She's funny that way.
Yeah.
How was your week?
Well... Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Wow, what a concept.
I'm telling you. My week could have been better.
Oh?
Obviously, you haven't been paying attention.
Oh, yes. Ooh,
yes.
That's not good.
Yes. And to the Jack...
Ass.
Decided to violate my privacy, I hope you rot in hell.
He was just giving a better home to your TV and Chase's computer and the video game controllers.
Yeah. So.
You were robbed.
Yes, I was.
Yes.
And, well... The only good thing that came out of it was I have a TV that's the same size as yours now. Ha!
Oh, this is great. So, first of all, he tells the guy who stole his TV, you know, I hope you rot in hell. So, if he's listening, now the guy's going to think, oh, God, now I'm supposed to rot in hell. And now he says, oh, I've got a new TV. It's even bigger.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Hey, the key's under the doormat, too, so I don't have to break it.
Oh, no, the boys should be home by now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm not worried about that.
Okay.
But, yeah.
You know, you need to move out of that complex.
I'm going to. In a month and a half.
Woo-wee.
Because that's when my lease is up.
You know, this and... And then a couple of weeks ago...
Yeah, I'm taking over half your living room, by the way.
Oh.
Which one? He's got two of them right now.
The bigger one.
Oh.
I'm taking over half the bigger living room.
Okay.
he didn't catch that memo that I sent out last week.
God.
Jimmy, Judy would like it. She'd have her electronics guy right there.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Sound on my computer?
That's.
I'm gonna work on it. It's gonna take a. It's gonna take a. I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe a hammer against the side of the computer or
Ouch.
Something.
I already did that.
It didn't work. Okay, maybe we need a sledgehammer.
I threw the speakers across the room too.
Mm.
They didn't work either.
Well, the speakers were fine. We figured that part out already.
Yeah, but see, they weren't before that. I fixed them when I threw them.
Oh, okay.
Okay. we heard half of that conversation. Chris. How was your week?
I got a brand new TV and a laptop.
Nice. I see.
So I've got to stand on the side of the street. You offer me $50. It's great. I had
know.
No such a deal.
Hey. Oh, God. I needed that.
Thank you, Chris. I needed that.
Yeah.
It was a... normal week. Yeah, my foot's actually gotten worse again.
Oh, not good.
Not
good
to be looking.
So, yeah. And, you know, work was work, but, you know, and I'm now starting to have to make plans for Pride.
Yes.
So it's like,
Yeah, no, that's going to be difficult. Anyway.
I think what happened is it finally got back to them that, you know, all the comments, you say, you know, Pride, it's so easy. You know, the straight people go set up everything for us, and we just show up and go, hello! I think
they got tired of that.
Well, that's not true because Chris and I are usually there helping set it up.
But, yeah, we are.
We're bookends when it comes to feet. I fell a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently, I scraped up my shin real bad. And evidently, it got infected.
Oh.
And went to cellulitis.
You know, with a cellulitis diagnosis, you're actually now an honorary Houston Big Men's Club member.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's part of our bylaws, I think.
Wow. So anyway, 2 days in a row, I got four times the dosage that a doctor would give a patient. So my doctor said, you know, you can do anything you want this weekend and you will never get gonorrhea.
As long as you do it with your foot over your head.
And I'm supposed to keep my foot elevated. I know, I'm
heart.
Ready. Come on with the jokes.
It's too easy. Just like you.
It's like I was supposed to keep my foot elevated there for 3 months. Didn't have any takers to help me with it, but you know.
Funny, Jimmy had neither.
No. No.
Nobody's had a whip held above his head the whole time, though.
You can bet on that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I heard all about it. Don't worry.
Wow. Okay. So, we got one robbed and...
two gimps?
One robbery and two gimps. How about that? We got a full house.
And it's Pride Week. Happy Pride Week, everyone.
Henceforth, why I started off with the music I did tonight.
And what was that music?
Dive in the Pool with Barry Harris, mm-hmm. From the Queer as Folk soundtrack. And Young, Gay, and Proud by Captain Magic from the same titled album.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, good.
Yeah, figured I'd start off our Pride Week rocking and rolling there.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to find 100 Degrees in the Shade or whatever the hell that name is.
Jeff Krasner.
That's yeah,
Jeff
Krasner. I couldn't find the CD, so.
Oh.
It's probably in the other bag. So.
No, it should be over there. It's one of our standbys.
Well, that was nice. So. Anyway, things going on in the community. In 1974, Stephen Grossman made GLBT history by having the first lyrically gay album released by a major label. Wow. He died of AIDS in 1991, but 6 weeks before, some of his friends got him into a studio to record a number of his unreleased songs. On the 20th anniversary of his death, a CD of this material called Something in the Moonlight is being released. So, QMH, Queer Music Heritage, done by J.D. Doyle, this month features special live tracks and interviews with Stephen's friends. And the CD's... oh, sorry. And the CD's producers... And from Stephen Grossman himself, a historic interview from 1977. And there's more. I've just added to my site a video of Stephen in concert from 1975. So you have got, almost 2 hours of this man at queermusicheritage.com. J.D. Doyle puts it together. And the first hour of that will be on Queer Voices this Monday night, which is on from 9 to 11 every Monday night. And, of course, check out J.D.'s Out Radio also, because he's featuring music and interviews from Sean Wiggins, Jennifer O'Connor, and David Dubb. What you got?
Gay Pride, a brilliant play, Italian cast, and a beautiful venue. Theater New West presents The Temperamentals by John Moranis. Temperamentals was code word for homosexuals in the early 50s, part of the created language of secret words that gay men used to communicate. The play tells the story of two men and the communist Harry Hay and the Viennese refugee designer Rudy Gernreich. As they fall in love while building the first gay rights organization in the pre-Stonewall United States.
Mm-hmm. Mattachine Society.
He said stages.
It's where?
It says United Stages. He has a typo.
Oh.
The Temperamentals is running through July 16th over at...
It's
the recital room at Dowling Music.
Yes.
2615 Southwest Freeway. Second floor at Kirby Drive.
That should be easy to get to.
For easier directions, go to dowlingmusic.com. There are Friday and Saturday performances at 8 p.m. Friday the 24th is going to be a Pride performance.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday, July 7th and 14th will be special performances at 7:30. For more information on those events and getting tickets and all that, go to theatrenewwest.com. That's TheatreNewWest.
Mm-hmm.
Theater Suburbia continues to celebrate its 50th anniversary season with a killer comedy, Murder at the Howard Johnson.
That the title alone is funny to me.
This is playing through July 2nd on Fridays and Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. and Sundays.
Sunday.
June 19th and the 26th at 3 p.m. Is all fair in love, even murder? That's the question posed by in this light and funny suspense comedy about a love triangle and a Howard Johnson's motor inn. In the first episode, Mitchell, an obviously in commonplace dentist who sees himself as the dashing heroic type, and Arlene, a middle-aged femme fatale of sorts, plan to murder her husband Paul, a blundering used car salesman. In the second episode, having discovered that Mitchell has been unfaithful, Arlene allies herself with Paul to do away with Mitchell. In the third episode, the two men, feeling foolish and betrayed themselves, join forces against Arlene. Does this murder attempt, like all others, fail?
That's
no,
funny.
But I think I've seen this on XTube. make your reservations early by calling 713-682-3525, or you can go to theatresuburbia.org. Remember, mm-hmm. that's theatre suburbia.org.
Mm-hmm.
Also playing this weekend and next weekend is Noises Off at Stage Door
yes.
in Pasadena. They don't use the word theater, so I don't have to spell it funny.
Oh, good.
It's stagerink.com. Also coming July 9th is a special benefit fundraiser for them.
Really?
At their Willa Dina and Nacho Dorita Sanchez.
Dorita Sanchez.
Yes.
Okay.
Are having they're the ones who do the Trailer Park New Year's Eve.
Those two.
They are doing one, 4th of July spectacular on the 9th.
And those girls get nasty.
Lots of great prizes that they're going to be there in auction, between auctions and door prizes and raffles and all that other good stuff.
Lovely. And that's at the theater.
That's at the theater, stageforinc.com for more information.
What's the date again?
July 9th.
Okay.
If I remember correctly. 9th or 10th.
Makes a difference, honey.
9th.
Okay.
Don't forget the Daddy Montrose contest is coming up on Father's Day on June 19th.
And that would be later on today.
The registration starts at 3 p.m., followed by the contest at 4 p.m. This gives everyone plenty of time to do your own thing early, attend the contest, and move on to the Father's Day show over at the BRB.
Maybe.
If you want to download an application, go to daddyofmontrose.org.
Well.
And go wake up Daddy Stutes there and say, hey, boo-boo, I want to be in.
Yeah.
This takes a poster of it. Michael's Outpost at 1419 Richmond Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Don Gill production, and Eric Stutes is the director. That's down here. He's a Dom.
Yeah. Then later on,
Father Knows Best, presented by the King Fathers to their Majesties Gerald McNeil and Christopher Garrett on Sunday.
Sunday.
He kept stalling on drinking a soda. So I had to. You knew I was waiting until you got a mouthful of soda.
I know.
June 19th at 7 p.m. over at the BRB, is that 2400 Brazos?
Mm-hmm.
This is being put on by a Rhesus. It is benefiting the Montrose Counseling Center, Lesbian Health Initiative, and 10% going to Chaos.
Yes.
Mark your calendar for the Super Duper Prize Spectacular Center Seniors and Friends Potluck Dinner on Tuesday, June 21st at 6:30. Over at the Fellowship Hall of Bethel Church, UCC, 1107 Shepherd and Center.
Can't make it. The movers are coming.
Yeah, right.
The movers are coming.
Judy's in charge. The movers are coming.
Yay.
Yeah. They've already planned on who's moving in after you. That's how much they're waiting to get you out of there.
I know.
They've already figured out who's moving into that apartment.
Yeah. They had a little clatch of people out there earlier today. They were deciding who was moving in.
Did they come to a conclusion?
Yeah, once they talked to one guy's
boyfriend
in.
Yeah.
They figure it's a good match. He's up at all hours yelling and screaming and watching TV. So.
Does he put out?
I don't know. I'm too busy hitting on the straight guy.
No.
Oh, goodness.
I got a cookie for him.
Well, I bet you do.
In addition to the delicious supper, there will be door prizes, Pride merchandise, and gas gift cards. Center Seniors and Friends Potlucks always takes place on the third Tuesday of the month. For more information, go to HoustonGLBTCommunityCenter.org. June 22nd, which is Wednesday at 7 p.m., Linda Morales will be speaking at Rice. GAYO, the Gay, Lesbian, Latino Organization, and the Center for the Study of Women, Gender, and Sexuality at Rice University, collaborate to present the first Latina lesbian activist, to present Latina lesbian activist Linda Morales.
She's close to the first.
Who will discuss her suit against the state of Texas in 1992 over sodomy laws. This takes place at the Humanities Building, room 117 at Rice University. For more information, go to HoustonGallo.org, that's Houston, G-A-L-L-O, or go to cswgs.rice.edu.
Okay. Wes.
Yep, Jocks for Jocks 2011,
ooh,
taking place over at F-Bar, which is at 202 Tuam.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's a lot of t-t-t-tus.
Yeah, well.
Mm-hmm. A Thursday night, wow.
Yeah.
Thursday, June 23rd, this is going to have a titillating, sexy fashion parade you won't want to miss. Bid on fashions, purchase raffle tickets, or get your hands on incredible art. More art, jeez. It all benefits the Osteo Foundation and
Osito.
The Montrose.
Osito.
Yeah, that too. And the Montrose
you
Softball
think you
League.
You understand the word Osito because you're in that group.
What does Osito stand for?
Little Bear.
Oh.
That's the group that gathers teddy bears for children infected and affected by HIV/AIDS.
It's free as admission with half-price happy hour until 9 p.m. For more information, you can go to fbarhouston.com. The Gay and Lesbian Latino Organization.
GAYO.
Yeah, that's why I said it the way I did.
Uh-huh.
Presents Noche de Gala, Black Tie Affair, our fifth annual...
I know, I can't believe it.
I'm not even going to try this next word.
Ballet?
Yeah, that one. With Grammy-winning Avazio Band, DJ Alex T, and Mariachi Yeah.
Okay.
Tickets.
Not an Italian festival.
No.
Spanish.
Yeah, that's right.
Tickets are $50 pre-sale and $60 at the door. This is all taking place on Friday, June 24th from 7 p.m. to midnight. God, this paper makes me look like I need glasses. Location
it's not
is
the paper.
Yeah, it's Jimmy. Is at the Carpenters Union Hall 551.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's 28 Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
2800 Hamilton, excuse me. For more information, you can call 832-654-7911 or go to the website Chris said a little while ago.
Okay.
He's just too afraid to wrap his tongue around something Hispanic.
Exactly.
And I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm. All painted up and ready to for show.
Ah.
The GLBT 2011 Pride Show on Friday, June 24th at 8:30 p.m. over at Tony's Corner Pocket. Open to all performers with Pride, and the show benefits the PWA Holiday Charities. The Three Musketeers presents Musical Madness over at the Brazos River Bottom front at Dips. 10 p.m. Yeah, brought them. At 10 p.m. on Friday, June 24th.
What's going on Friday, June 24th?
It's the day before Pride.
Uh-huh.
Well, what better place to soak in the air conditioning you'll need the following day than the VRB?
Exactly. Tell me about it.
Boy, they got some great air conditioning over there.
Woo-wee!
Hosted by Royce Wood, Christopher Ray Del Rio, and Craig W. Ray.
Yeah.
This is an Aresis event benefiting their Rain 27 charities. The Montrose Counseling Center, LHI Houston, and 10% going to Chaos.
Okay.
Oh, look, another one at the BRB, which the BRB proudly presents on Sunday.
Sunday.
July 10th at 7 p.m. A Christmas in July burlesque.
Oh, burlesque.
Yeah, that one too. I like the other way better. MCs are Don Gill, Anne-Marie Gill, Marsha Meek Ann Gill, with special guest MC Fiona Dawson.
Wow.
That's where Gill's an entertainer. Mm.
I know, we got the whole Gill family going on here.
Really?
No. Isn't there more?
Probably.
There's a lot.
Directed by David Sawyer, this is a PWA Holiday Charities event benefiting the Age Trouble Fund clients.
You don't find that many gills on the floor, except in a fishmonger.
Yeah. Well, guess what? Here's another gill. Ricky D. Gill, Mr. Gay Pride 2011, presents Hot Cowboy Disco Night.
Oh.
On Friday, July 15th at 10:30 p.m. I'll let you guess where.
BRB.
Uh-huh. So Cowboy Up and Boogie Down. Show is open to all performers and benefiting PWA Holiday Charities.
Mm-hmm.
And then one more gill. Don Gill Productions presents Live 2011 on Sunday. August 21st, 2011, 7 p.m. over at, guess?
The BRB.
Uh-huh. Director and Master of Ceremony is Clay Hardy. And again, we're benefiting the PWA Holiday Charities.
Yeah, that's his big event of the year.
Hey, one other thing I want to throw out there that's coming up on July 15th, if I remember the correct date, over at the Ripcord.
Oh.
The Houston Council of Clubs presents Louis Foreplay.
Oh, yes. A mini Louis.
A one-day Louis, so Jimmy is going to be busy. He only has hours to do what usually takes him days.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go through three pairs of knee pads.
We are, what's going to be going on is basically to let everyone get a better idea of what's on Louis. There's going to be the unveiling of the pin and poster for next year's Louis 39. And we're doing something different. We are going to have a reception contest.
Oh.
And we are also going to have a mini show of shows.
Mm-hmm.
That both of these contests are going to be, there'll be special judges to judge these, but there's also a percentage of the who wins is going to be based off of tips received to the performers.
Oh.
And to the beverages in the reception.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically like, you know, Dancing with the Stars. The judges count for a certain amount of percentage, and then the audience gets their percentage of the of who wins each of these different events. And just give people a little taste of what Louis is about and remind them what all it is.
Sure.
To have that fun. And like I said, we're doing something completely different this year for that, and it's happening at the Ripcord on the 15th, if I'm counting the days correctly, without looking at the calendar.
I think that's actually the 17th, which is the Sunday, isn't it? Because the 15th is a Friday.
Okay.
Because I think we were originally going to do it on the 16th.
So doing it on Friday, not Saturday?
Hold on a second.
Get out the minutes of the meeting. We don't have a poster yet.
I see.
But, no, like I said, it's going to be an interesting time for everyone to get together.
Oops,
and see.
I forgot about those.
Mm-hmm.
Jerky, anybody?
I beg your pardon?
Maybe later.
Let's see.
Is this a jerky circle?
Wrong kind of jerky.
No.
Jerky boys? You know, it's not the reggae show. We don't have beef jerky. You know, chicken jerky. Chicken jerky.
No, I got pork and
I'll bet
beef.
You do.
He jerked his pork.
Oops, wrong folder.
Aren't you supposed to pull your pork?
Unfortunately, they're both up on the north side of the airport.
Yeah, they are north of the airport. Right,
yes.
Exactly where they were.
Yeah, I'm on the back side of the airport.
We bet
so
you
to speak.
Are.
Okay.
Hey, it could be worse there for the old timers there. He's just south of the old blimp base.
Oh, yes. Okay, I know where he is now.
Actually, that's where my dealership is at the old blimp base location.
No kidding.
July 17th, 4 to 6 p.m. at the Ripcord.
4 to 6?
Sunday?
Yes.
Wow.
I guess you should have been paying attention at the meeting. Yeah.
Well, that was at EJ's where we could hardly hear anything anyway.
Mm.
But come out and join us there on Sunday.
Sunday.
July 17th. And like I said, you'll see the pin and poster winners for the year, for what's going to be going for the next year. And, you know, like I said, if you want to have a brief taste of what Louis can be about.
And Louis stands for.
Let us entertain you.
Uh-huh. We can.
And the main events for Louis takes place in February 23rd through the 26th, 2012. It is the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday after Ash Wednesday.
Exactly. Every year. For how many years now?
Going on 39.
Wow.
Yes.
That's amazing.
So the fun part is next year, you know, how many people are going to call it 40 and how many people are just going to call it extra large.
Mm. So, Judy.
Oh, I love that one. That was good.
You've got a history segment.
I do.
And you have, who are your guests?
I have Mr. Daniel Houston here. He's a local artist, and mm-hmm. his sidekick, Gloria, friend of his, is here.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually did a fundraiser introducing his art to the community,
mm-hmm.
because he does amazing erotic and suggestive art, as well as
abstracts.
That word.
Fabulous abstracts.
Abstracts. Oh, I always want to call it asbestos, you know, when I go, that's so wrong. I'm sure he could probably work in asbestos, too.
Abstracts mess with your mind. Asbestos messes with your lungs.
Oh, okay. Well, then these are abstracts, because they do, because I see eroticism in every one of his abstracts. It's like looking at ink blots, no matter what color they are. It's like, oh, well, don't you see the... Oh, no, we can't talk about that one. It's like, you know, he keeps saying, no, these are my abstracts. And I'm like, I know what they are. Uh-huh. So he's an amazing artist. He does. He has a huge technique that's all his own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going to talk in the art. And
yes.
I think he's going to talk a little bit about that, as well as the fundraiser tonight. Because this, if I understand him correctly, and it's still the plan, this is like the first of three that he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
The unfortunate truth is we were up against the, you know, Pride Week opener for this season.
Yeah.
And Daniel and I are going to talk a little bit about calendars before we set the second one.
Yeah, because there wasn't a lot of lead time on this.
Yeah. So, you know, but other than that, it was very well received very well received.
By the people who were
there. By the people who were there tonight. And everybody mm-hmm. seemed to have an excellent time. I would have preferred that the gallery be a little cooler, since it was just as cool outside as it was inside.
I have one word for that. Duh.
Anyway.
But I'm very excited about this, because I think his art is going to hit the ground running once he gets off, you know.
Yeah.
Gets on there.
Yeah, I think that me and Sarah were in the same mind about the temperature of that building.
Yeah. The unfortunate truth is, I have to say up front, Dan had nothing to do with that. So,
No, it was not
his fault. It wasn't, I guess, anybody's fault. It was a matter of not thinking ahead and turning the air on early enough.
Yeah.
Because by the time we left there, it was nice and getting comfortable.
I was still sweating.
Well, yeah, you were running the bar, so what do you know?
Anyway, let's go to some music, and we'll bring Dan on.
When I get a brand new hairdo, and my eyelashes all a curl, I float like the clouds on hairdo. I enjoy being a macho, macho man. I'd like to be a macho man. Macho, macho man. I like to be a macho. Kick line and 3-4.
Macho, macho man.
I gotta be a macho. Gotta be. I've gotta be a macho, macho man. I've gotta be a macho. Higher, girls, higher.
Macho, macho man.
Is that what I meant?
She's gotta be a macho man.
You sound like the chipmunks.
Macho, macho man.
Ooh, you sound like the Bee Gees.
She's gotta be a macho.
Now break it down.
Trampolina wants to be a macho, macho man.
I can grow a mustache and you can call me Stan.
Jogging in the morning. Go, girl, go.
Turns out that I run fast, so why'd they call me slow?
You can best believe that she's a macho man.
Macho is like nacho, but it starts with M.
Hey, hey. Hey, 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 hey! Macho, macho, macho man. She's gonna be a macho man.
I gotta be a macho, macho man.
I gotta be a macho, macho.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's face it. I, like each and every one of you, wanna be a macho man. And I'll have macho man accessories, like a Jeep, or power tools, or Maria Shriver. And I'll hang out with other macho men. You know, the way they dance and make out together at circuit parties, and construction sites, and prisons. Oh, and I'll have my own special macho man, and he'll be muscly, and sweaty, and naked. No, not naked. He's wearing a dog collar. No, not a dog collar. Dick clamp. Dick clamp. No, no, no. Jumper cable. Jumper cable. And he comes toward me and he says, "Bend over, trash." And I say, "Wait, my name is Trampolina." Meanwhile, the voltage meters are going, "Woo." Macho, macho man, I like to be a macho man. Macho, macho man, I enjoy being a girl.
All right, and we're back. Hi, Judy.
Hey. Hi, honey. How are you?
I'm recovering from the heat.
Long time no see.
I know, right?
It's been, what, 4 minutes?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, three.
Well, this is the GK... Short song.
Uh-huh.
This is the GCAM hour for the month. We have the third Saturday every month. And my sidekick, John, made it this month. Yay, John!
Good
You're in town
morning.
And not doing art cards and so on.
Nope.
Yay!
Finally okay. got some free time.
And you had an opportunity to actually spend some time in the lobby with our special guest.
Yes.
Gloria has opted not to talk, so if anybody really wants Gloria to talk, you'll have to call in and say so. And then she'll get mad at me. But that's okay. I think Dan can carry it by himself. He doesn't really, you know, need help. It's always nice, though, to have an extra voice on the air. So, without further ado... This is GCAM, and that's the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum of Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender History, Inc. You can find us at www.gcam.org, or you can find us on Facebook. So, we're out there. Dan's show was on, Dan's poster was on, you know, our webpage and on Facebook, and... in all my friends' email boxes, and, you know. So, Facebook is good for some things. So, good evening, Dan. How are you, dear?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm still kind of up a little bit, I guess. I was kind of down for a while in the heat, but I'm up like now, so ready to go.
Okay.
Well, and your daughter Danielle was there helping us this evening.
She's always on hand.
Whatever
I need her for.
There you go. And yeah, she definitely is the protector. She's a force to be dealt with. So I'm sorry she opted not to come this evening. I think it was past her bedtime or such.
She had made plans. She and her girlfriend had made plans to have dinner and go out and kick their heels up.
We did that when we left. We ran out and unloaded the car and had dinner and then came here.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
So.
Well, you were telling me a little bit earlier that you've been painting erotic art for just about a year?
Yes, yes. And erotic art isn't that much different from just painting figures and of males and females. It's the interaction that I have really branched off into, and the series came about kind of out of accident, because I was just fooling around with some figures and the human body, and I stretched it and made a couple making love, and it was so well received I said, well, I'll do a couple more.
There you go.
And that's how I got started.
Well, I can certainly see how it was well received.
Yeah, I was taking a look at some of the work before the show, and you can't see it on the radio, obviously, but you do have a website. It's danhoustonartist.com, and if you're by the internet, I guess you can go there. You've got examples of your work on the website?
Yes, and if you can't find it on that site, you can go to architecturalwalldecor.com.
And but you do both abstract and representational. I was just looking at the representational stuff, it's like putting two people in a room, turning the lights down, and turning on a solid color light, like it would be all blue. So most of your paintings were two different colors, black and blue, black and red, black and white?
No, not necessarily. No, some of them are brown, black, blue, green, gray.
Rainbow colors, yes.
Yeah.
And you
have it accurate when you say that it looks like a couple in a foggy room or kind of a smoky room, but you can barely make out what the figure. There are two figures in there, and so you have to look kind of closely. And I play with my light, and I throw lights on highlights of the body,
mm-hmm.
and so it makes the viewer focus. And almost like wipe his eyes and look more closely.
Yeah, that's exactly it was my experience. I was looking at it and it was like.
But once you see it, it never goes away.
No, it doesn't.
You don't have to look for it the second time.
No. No. It was clearly a woman there, and then very slowly the man underneath her came into focus, and he wasn't pointing the same way.
Oh, what a concept.
Hmm.
Mm. Go figure.
Yeah. I had one couple, one of the paintings named. Is Adam and Lilith, and I was intrigued by the subject matter of Lilith, and in the three paintings that I did of Adam and Lilith, Lilith was always on top in the making love position, and they have an interesting story of mythology.
She was the second wife of Adam?
No, she was the first.
She was the first.
Yes.
And what happened?
Tell them before me.
Well, the story goes that Adam complained a lot to God because Lilith was very aggressive and assertive, and she really didn't listen to him and really wasn't going to be a second-class citizen to a male. And one of the things that she insisted upon when they made love was that she'd be on the top position. And Adam constantly complained to God, "God, I just can't do anything with this woman, and I can't have my way with her. She doesn't listen to me. She doesn't understand that I'm supposed to be on top and that I'm the male and I'm supposed to be the dominant." And after God listening to Adam complain and complain, he finally banished Lilith from the garden and turned her into a serpent.
Isn't it just like a man to get his way that way?
Mm-hmm.
And Eve came next, and she was much more in line with what Adam the male wanted. But the paintings that I've done, three of the paintings, are titled Adam and Lilith. And in each painting, Lilith is in the top position making love.
I like your attitude.
So there's some, I don't know if I want to call it equality, but certainly the woman should have her way when it comes to sex. And she shouldn't have to just go by to get by. So that's my liberal attitude about sex.
And I'm not sure there's a woman under 40 who would disagree with that. Mm. Maybe 50, maybe 30, who knows? I know I don't.
Okay.
But it's interesting the things that get your attention. You know, I mean, that the story itself would get your attention, but then to think to put it on a canvas, you know, I mean, yeah. It's kind of... To me, it's interesting. Maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
So is that the kind of thing? I mean, it's a basically Bible stories of that kind
no.
that inspired. What inspires you?
No, it was the eroticism, first of all, of a couple making love and mm-hmm. just the erotic nature of that, and taking it further than just a missionary sex position, and. And then it went from man and woman to woman and woman. Then it went to man and man as couples. And Eros, to me, and to others, some others, is not about necessarily who you're making love to as a sex, but that you're making love to who you love.
And when I look at your pictures, your paintings, you know, I don't even think about making love. I don't think about the couple or who's in it or whatever, or the group who's in it, as the case may be. I mean, it's very sexual, obviously. But it's more romantic and erotic than it is sex, regardless of the positions or who's in it or where they are or whatever. You have managed to pick up not just on, you know, interesting positions and backgrounds and color schemes and so on, but you have picked up the emotion in your art, and that's what gets my attention. I mean,
there's clearly a relationship going on there, and both people
anybody can draw two people having sex. You know, it's like it's a million things that you know, that you can see in a store. Truly, it is. There's nothing new about that kind of stuff.
Right.
But, and it sells, you know. But you've taken it one step further in your work. I don't know how you... Oh, bless you, my child. I don't know how you developed that eye or whatever, but you definitely... I mean, it's got to be natural. I mean, it's not something you just stop and say, well, I need to get the emotion in here. No, it's there, and it shows in every nuance of the picture, but especially if you see them in the eyes or the faces. Unbelievable emotion more than detail. I mean, it's not the makeup, it's not the lips, it's the emotion you see in those faces.
Well, thank you. As an artist, that's very much what I seek to accomplish.
Yes, and, succeeded.
Sometimes I feel it that I've accomplished it, and sometimes I'm not sure. So I leave it to the viewer.
I'm looking for the one where you missed, okay?
Okay.
If I find it, I'll let you know.
Okay.
Well, how much are you painting for the viewer? Are you painting primarily for yourself, or are you painting to communicate to somebody an idea?
I'm painting for both. My satisfaction as an artist is in accomplishing the fact that I'm able to draw my viewer into my work emotionally as well as visually. And if I can, no differently than an artist who's a vocal artist or a performing artist, if you don't get applause and don't get acceptance of your work, you know, it's not complete. I mean, you do the best you can, but you want to know that when you finish, that your audience understood and appreciated what you were trying to accomplish and what the message that you were trying to deliver.
On that note, I don't want you, obviously, to give any of your trade secrets away, because everybody has their own way of doing things, etc. But I had the privilege in your home of seeing some of your unfinished pieces, literally pencil sketches.
Yes.
And then I've seen them since they have been completed. And I know it's quite a process. And I don't want you, like I said, to divulge any secrets so that, you know, the world can try to copy them. There'll be somebody out there who will anyway. But how did you come up, you know, how did that process come around? Because it's not a matter of, oh, I took a brush and slapped some paint on the canvas, or I took a pencil and then traced it out. It's quite a process. And I think if people have some clue about the length and the breadth of that process, it's going to make them look at your art very differently.
Okay. Well, this process came about really out of a dream. I was having a dream one night about, and I was making love in the dream.
Yeah.
And it was in a cloudy, foggy room. And I woke up that morning and I said, "Now, how could I create that on canvas or paper?" And I started fooling around and experimenting, and came up with a technique that began to work.
That's a heck of a dream.
That's exactly what it's like. Yeah. You're looking at exactly two people like or one person in a cloudy room.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we were talking about, you know, using life models and painting from that, and you don't use life models.
No, not at this time. Sometime in the future, I would love to be able to do that.
So how do you get your visuals? Is it all from your mind's eye? Or
my mind's eye, and I have a pretty good imagination. My life experiences. I have gay friends. I have straight friends, and I talk with them. And I sometimes have a notepad, and they will sketch out a scene,
positions and everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they'll say,
gay guys will do anything for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Straight to.
That's pretty broad.
Yeah.
And I have some friends that we sat down one Sunday afternoon, and they were describing situations and scenes that appeal to gay men. This is a gay subject matter in particular. And one of the scenes was that a young boy came into a room, and he was getting undressed, and he was sitting in front of his lover, and his lover was an older man, fully dressed with a suit and tie on. Mm. And the young boy was standing there with half, almost nude, and they were just talking. And so as they were describing the scene, that was one of them. Another one was looking at a person in a shower, coming out of a shower.
Oh, I love that.
With a towel wrapped around him, or the towel was about to drop. So if you notice, I have a couple scenes where men were either in showers or coming out of a shower. I don't have all the imagination, but I try to reach out and talk and listen and learn what I don't know. And I try to incorporate that in my work. And that's what all artists do. I mean, their life is spent learning.
Seems to be working for you.
Oh, thank you.
And so, Paul stuck his head in and stuck his head out. Paul is our erotic photographer, so to speak,
okay.
Who missed the show tonight. Shame on him, Paul. You're in trouble.
So during these conversations, anything surprise you? Oh, I'd say shock, but you know.
Yes.
Like what?
Oh, let me see.
Anything you learned that was new?
Yes, it was. I'm a straight man, and so I have certain sensitivities and sensibilities.
Uh-huh.
That are unique to a straight man that aren't maybe necessarily unique to a gay man. And so I was talking to some friends of mine, and they said, "You know what's really hot?" I said, "No, what?" "Threesomes."
Uh-huh.
I said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah. Yeah. Think about three guys rather than just two guys." He said, "That's hot." So I have three or four paintings with three guys.
Okay.
In various
Can we describe them on the air?
To some degree, we got this little list of words you can't use.
Okay,
you know,
well, I guess
that nature.
Where is it?
We have to be aware of it.
I don't think you can describe.
Where's the list?
Slang body parts, I think you can describe their.
Wes, we're missing the
scientific
list.
Names.
Oh, I can use scientific.
We can call John's house. His children both know the list.
Yeah,
heart.
They showed up at KPFT and they saw the do not say words list.
I'm still looking for it.
I don't see it. They
it's in the lobby.
Oh, it's over here in a small print.
Yeah.
There it is on the wall. Yeah, like I can read
that.
Yeah,
it's the words in the black box there.
For obvious reasons, Wes will not read them to you.
Well, they're backwards, too.
Okay, so three guys, and what are they doing?
Well, let me see. One of them, one of the paintings, one of the men is being massaged in his genital area, and another man is kissing him on his neck over his shoulder.
Hmm.
Another scene is two men kissing. And one of the men is being, he's another, the third man is engaging in oral sex with him.
Mm-hmm.
That's at least two of them. And there are probably about maybe four or five, different paintings where there's threesomes.
And this is all done in the same style that I was looking at?
Some of them are not. Some of them
I'm gonna cut you off right there. That's gonna give the audience time to think about that. Let it soak in for a few minutes.
Can we give the website name?
Because we don't have time.
PSAs. We'll be back.
Hi, you've reached the Johnsons. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about your apartment. Please give me a call back at 2.
Hi, hello. This is Rafael Paredes. Please call me back at 718.
This is Jeannie Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can, please call me back.
Hello, my name is Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello, this is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well, you're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Course of a meteoric music career that spanned the turbulent decades of the 60s and 70s, Phil Oakes saw the bright lights of fame and social justice in equal measure, a contradiction that eventually tore him apart. The Houston premiere of the film, Phil Oakes, There But For Fortune, traces the arc of Oakes' life, which paralleled that of the times, how the anger, satire, and righteous indignation that drove his music also drove him to dark despair. The documentary features interview and performance footage of Oakes, along with commentary by Joan Baez, Pete Seeger, Sean Penn, and others. Phil Oakes, There But For Fortune will screen at the Brown Auditorium Theater at the Museum of Fine Arts Houston, June 30th to July 4th. More information at www.mfah.org/films or call 713-639-7515 or visit us on Facebook under Films at the Museum of Fine Arts Houston.
And you're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, a listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, 89.7 Huntsville, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org, now broadcasting in high-definition radio.
And this is Judy Reese.
And John.
And Dan Houston is, and Gloria is hiding in the corner, talking about the show that Dan presented tonight over at the Mixed Emotions Fine Arts Gallery. It was a show and sale that GCAM was a big part of. And we're talking about Dan and his art in general this evening. We're trying to get him introduced into the community a little bit, because I think our community would be very interested in Dan and his various forms of arts, some of which is erotic, not all of which, but you know, art is art and everybody likes something different.
Mm-hmm. It's so, not your art, it
no,
might
it's
be
no,
somebody else's
no,
art.
Yeah, but this, you know, there wasn't a piece in the house tonight that I wouldn't hang somewhere in the house I live in.
It's pretty outstanding.
Yeah. I mean, there are some things that didn't appeal to me personally because, hello, I'm a girl. And I'm not interested in the male form of art, but I can appreciate the male form.
And if you want to see Dan Houston's art, you can go to danhoustonartist.com.
There you go. And Dan, now we'll let you talk a minute.
Okay.
We were in the middle of something.
Yeah, we
here.
Were talking
we
about private
off.
Sessions.
Yes. Well, we will.
You will do a private session. And
yes, that's always fun, where I get an opportunity to visit with a couple or an individual and take photographs. That's generally how it will start out, after I've talked and got some idea of what they're looking for and what kind of image they want to portray. And it would sometimes start with small sketches in my pad, and then we would progress to photographs. And
Dan brought up a good idea as we were standing in the lobby. He said he could take me all 5'6" and make me 6 foot tall.
And, we can stretch you
and
out.
Ripped.
Whoa, mama. All right.
So he can take the idea and take it anywhere you want to go.
That's right. That's art. Yeah. But you know, the thing about that is that's just another facet to you, is because you said you don't use live models as a rule, etc. And that's great. Like I said, you have humongous detail in your facial features and the body parts and so on. And it all comes from your head or your dreams. But to take someone who actually is sitting in front of you and to put their face features and flaws on a canvas, that takes a whole different kind of talent. That's another whole different step.
Well, yeah, well, that's the difference, the primary difference between painting and a photographer.
Yeah.
Photographer, a camera, for the most part, has to capture what is in front of them. A visual artist has the opportunity or the option of altering any part of the photograph or any part of that person that he wants, and in any form that he may want to. I mean, he might, as I was saying to West, that you could take a man who's 5 foot and 6 foot and big abs and tight stomach and tight butt and the whole bit, you know, where... Well, now with the various things you can do on a computer, you can do that with photography, too.
Well, yeah, but you don't do it on a computer, and that's a huge difference. Of course, even you, I'm not sure even you could take me and make me happy with
me. Oh, absolutely, you could. Make you into Angelina Jolie.
Oh, okay. Well, I wouldn't recognize me, that's for sure.
Or but, make you with Angelina Jolie.
Oh, I'll pass. She's too young. Oh, see?
Well, that sounds kind of ageist.
Well,
Angelina Jolie is going to be 60 one day. That wouldn't be hard to do.
Yeah, but by then I'm going to be 90.
No. It could be today.
Oh, well, that's true. You could do, yeah, you could fix that.
There you go.
That could work.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We can talk.
Well, when you were studying art, you must have worked with live models.
Yes, I did.
And have you worked with non-professional folks modeling for you? Are people generally pretty shy when they model in the nude?
Yes, they are.
And so, they are. I guess, how do you get them comfortable to the point where you can work with them?
Well, first of all, it has to be a large element of trust. Years ago, you didn't have to worry about so many abuses with a photograph as you have to today. I mean, you can start with an innocent photograph, and it can be retouched and just manipulated, and you know, I mean, it's just crazy what people
put
can do.
Put on a net. Yeah.
So, you know, there has to be an element of trust, and I wouldn't want to expose a person where they have to trust, and that's the only thing they have between they and I is trust. I'd rather draw them or photograph them with clothing or some clothing on, and then I can take the clothing off in my mind. I can paint the rest of the body with a bra or a pair of underwear on. I don't need them to take it off for me to
create. Know it's there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that can be done.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's good to know out there. Somebody listening, thinking, oh, I'd love to have a nude of myself, but I don't think I could sit there and let him look at me. Now you know you don't really have to.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Who's more shy, men or women?
Both.
Equal?
Equal.
Equal?
Absolutely equal.
Finally found equality in this world, Gloria.
Now, I'd seen a comment somewhere where there's men and women are more concerned about different body parts. Like, women are concerned about their feet. Women, for whatever reason, women don't like to show their feet.
I've never run into that yet.
Any differences?
Well, I mean... If we talk about body parts, from young boys, men are very conscious about their penis. And females, I think my experience has been that they're very conscious about their breasts. And in the day when women's genitals were generally considered to be sexy if they were hairy, they didn't have to worry that much about the genitals because they were hidden behind hair. But nowadays, that's changed, and the fashion trend is more no hair in the genital area, so they are more conscious about that part of them, and they'll.
Is that true, Judy?
What, that it's more hairless than?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Wow.
There's all kinds of things that come into play, and I can understand the exposure part as opposed to, yeah, there's a huge difference there.
I didn't know that.
Wow, we talked Jonathan tonight. And there's lots of reasons for it. But
such as?
But not a lot of them have anything to do with Dan's art. Well, cleanliness, for one.
Oh, okay.
You know. Temperature, for two. You know.
Temperature?
There are a lot of reasons, yes.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's an interesting experience the first time.
And does this apply to guys, too?
I would imagine. I don't know.
You're thinking, Dan.
Well, with men, generally, it's a thing of if they're not heavily, if they're not endowed where they think they should be, then they're going to be a little bit shy about it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
The old saying, the tree looks bigger when the underbrush is cut down.
Yeah, that's true.
And Chris joins us.
That's true.
Thank you, Chris.
But
yeah, keep us honest in there with seven words, Chris.
Yeah, but the advantage of a painting is that if a guy's endowed with three, he can have eight.
There you go.
You know, so he's going to feel a little bit better, maybe, about a portraiture.
That one just went right over my head. I'm sorry. I guess I can't really describe or explain that out of the air. If he's endowed with three, he can have eight?
Mm-hmm. Think about it. We'll get back to you.
All right.
Did I mention he's my straight sidekick?
No.
Oh, okay.
The slow
my
straight.
My straight slow sidekick, John.
Right. It's something like the 7-inch ruler.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. All right. I think I got it now.
Thank you, Jesus. Okay.
Mm-hmm. The light.
I love that look on his face when I see it. I went, oh, we got him now.
All right. Well,
yeah. I have several friends who were out of town this weekend, unfortunately, who would just absolutely go gaga over your work. And so I hope they get another opportunity to see it not too distant future.
Well, one of your pieces kind of sticks with me. I guess they all stick with me. But the one that's in brown and black, and it's a male torso from like mid-thigh all the way up to the neck, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that. Where did that come from?
Actually, that is the first one that I did.
Really?
Yes. That's the first one.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely love it.
I was holding it sideways, and it looked like a nose, and it looked like a face, and then we turned it upright.
That's what's so neat about his art. Yeah, you have to really hunt the eroticism sometimes because it doesn't just slap you in the face.
No.
I see angel wings on some of his men.
Really?
And they went,
yeah, she did.
You see what? You know, and it's like, yeah, this one has wings too, and this is, and actually Jimmy bought one tonight.
Was that intentional?
No, it wasn't.
So you just saw something that...
When we met at my house a few weeks ago, Judy kept mentioning, this one's got wings and this one's got wings. And I said, you know, I hadn't noticed that, but I could see...
What the wings!
Yeah, I could see the wings in some of these men. And then that came about because of the way I treat my paper before I start painting or before I start drawing.
And they're very prominent, but they don't overpower the fact that they're not really there.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's just the background, and it was unintentional.
Yes, the background, the texture, and the paint, and the paper.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my paintings are on paper.
But, and I say that, and I don't want people out listening to think that, oh, well, they're like photographs, or I've all got the same background, and stick something on the front. No, these are all different size and shapes and colors of wings that I'm seeing. It's not that he's got two big white feathery looking things behind this and then he painted something over it. No, they're all, in fact, none of them have feathers.
No.
Well, one does. That one has it. Yeah, the one Jimmy bought has feather-ish in the bottom of it. But that means it's not individual feathers or, you know, that kind of thing. But clearly they're there. And how many of us, honestly, in this community in the past 30 years have lovers and friends and family who have gone on because of AIDS, and this was what they looked like before that devastating disease hit them, and of course they're totally emaciated and destroyed by the time it takes them. But I tend to think that when their spirits go up to heaven, I mean, it's beautiful. They take on the original. They don't take the form with them. They don't take the body with them. But you remember them in their original, more beautiful form. Mm-hmm. And that's what I see when I see the wings. I know I have a vivid imagination.
Well, actually, Judy, as I'm sitting here listening to you, you're giving me some more creative energy to work with.
Well, you go, girl.
Yeah.
So, I could be amused.
Yeah. And that's what artists do. They
go ahead.
They listen. Ignore me. They listen and they observe and they interpret it in some form or fashion.
Mm-hmm.
In the word.
That's what it's all about.
Yes.
So the show you did this evening was primarily male art?
Yes, this one was titled Arrows Men.
Okay.
And Abstracts, and meaning that the abstract art, which is a very, very different venue, or very different representation of work, was fused into the whole body of work. There were about 80 pieces of work.
Wow.
And about half of them were men.
Mm-hmm.
And there were maybe half a dozen females subjects in the series, and the rest were abstracts.
Do you consider the abstracts erotic?
I do.
Some people do. and I can understand why, because my work is very passionate. I'm an abstract expressionist. And so I paint to music, very lively music, and jazz for the most part. And so if I'm in a romantic mood, my abstracts are gonna take on some flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not intentional; it's just how it comes out.
I guess another one of those, it depends on how you look at it, too. I mean, again, what you see.
Certainly. If you're a romantic person at heart, you're going to see romance and that kind of thing in their art. If you're an accountant who only looks at numbers all day and who only thinks in terms of numbers and figures like that, you may not get it.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking at one of these images on your business card, and yeah, that could be male private parts, but I'm not really sure. And that could be female private parts, but I'm not really sure. You gotta really look at it, I think.
Now, the thing about his abstracts,
yeah,
is what I observed in his home is he can take these things literally and lift out a portion of them and make it another picture. I mean, I think that's how I describe it. I'm not sure how to describe it exactly. So sometimes you have this one huge picture of something or other, and then he takes one little portion and does something on a different canvas, for lack of a better word, and it's very different. You don't recognize that they were even related. Or he can take it and actually literally cut it, and seeing two or three pieces instead of the one is, and I'm not talking about technique here, I'm talking about actually lifting some portion, not necessarily the center or whatever, but lifting some portion out, and you've got a totally different look. And one of them may be semi-erotic, and the other one may be like, oh my God, it's the Empire State Building, you know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting what you can do with pieces of his art as opposed to a canvas. Was that weird or what?
You have a great imagination, Judy.
I know.
Amazing imagination. I'm gonna get a tape recorder and just let you talk for an hour. I'm gonna record the conversation. Yeah. And then I'm gonna go to work.
I am a muse. No.
There you go.
I've been called other things, but it usually comes in five letters, not four.
Oh, okay.
And it usually starts with a capital.
Well, I can paint the five letters also.
Oh, good. See, you can get me down easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I worked for years for that reputation. I deserve it.
Mm.
So, I guess what way I interpreted it, you haven't really done a lot of female erotic art yet? That
yes, I have.
Yes, he has.
Yeah.
But your next show is going to be...
My next show will be Eros Women.
Okay, so I misunderstood.
Yeah, he just didn't bring a lot tonight. He had a little taste of it.
Well, the one I saw, I thought, was female.
Well, I said he didn't bring a lot of the female tonight. This was the male show.
Yeah.
So. He's got a couple of females here that's like, if art was in my budget.
And going back to your inspiration, You mentioned that you looked at porn film for inspiration.
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
Yes, I'll turn on a porn film and DVD, and I'll see things going on. I say, that's interesting. And
that's what all the guys I know say.
Yeah, but I mean, not to say that that's the only reason they look at porn. I enjoy porn like anybody else. I'm not going to feign my innocence. The only reason that is like people who say they read Playboy only for the articles.
I'm so glad you didn't try to go there, Dan.
But no, I love porn.
Yeah.
And
any ideas it brings?
Yes. I just part of life.
Well, you know, that's the thing. You can look at your art, and you couldn't deny that you loved porn or liked porn or whatever, or that you had never seen it, because that didn't just come one morning when you woke up. It comes from a passion.
Well, sex. It's just sex and passion.
That's right. Sex is a very important thing in our lives.
At what point does porn become art?
That's a difficult question for me to answer. It's like the difference between pornography and eroticism. I suppose my vision would be that pornography is more of a visual feast, and eroticism is visual as well as an emotional feast.
Ah. Never heard that one. That's good.
I would say that pornography is more of a visual feast.
Okay.
And I think that eroticism is a visual and emotional feast.
Okay. I'll go with that.
I think there's much more emotion, passion, love, sorrow, happiness in eroticism. But if you just want to just get straight up pornography, it's just titillating and it's just visual. That you're titillating your senses. There's very little emotion, very little passion.
And no thought processes.
it's almost like masturbating.
You're brain dead, yeah. So, yeah, I'll go along with that. That works for me.
That's good.
Yeah.
I have to remember that. So if you just take the eroticism out of art, all you left is the, well, not all, but you have the emotion. Art is emotion. On canvas. On paper.
It should be. Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, we have a choice when it comes to art of if we want to buy something just for an investment purpose, we could buy a gold brick and sit on our mantle and look at it every day when we get up. Just look at a gold brick. That would be, to me, that would be very limited. I would rather look at a beautiful painting, get up every day and look at a beautiful painting that makes me feel good. It makes me, that arouses me, that titillates me, that gives me a reason to live. It makes me happy.
Makes you happy. Yeah.
And, I mean, that would be what I would want to put my money into. But to look at a diamond ring, for some people that works. It wouldn't do it for me.
Well, there are people that have that very, physical life side of them. That's what makes the world go round, is the money I have, or the way I can spend it, or what I have that people can see that I have. And, yeah. It takes all kinds. Although I've just been informed by text that erotic is not always porn.
No, it's not.
I didn't disagree with that statement either.
No, of course not.
So. Yeah.
No, I think you explained it really well. Mm. There's the emotional angle and then there's the erotic angle in any of the art that combines the two.
And I don't think about any of it. All I know is what I like and don't like.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's people like me. It's a real... Yes. We're either very easy to please or very difficult to please.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Most people are.
And, well, I mean in art.
Oh.
In art, some people have, I like this, period. I want to see naked men. And it's like, they don't care what they look like or what they're doing. If they're a naked man, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's a frontal view or if it's a butt view, you know. Can I say that? I guess I can. Nobody's okay. Turned me off. You know, then that's what they want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing else appeals to them. So, you know, in me, I can find something in almost everything.
Do you have any erotic art in your home?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, out on display?
Not right this minute because I just moved, but well, it's kind of leaning against the wall in the living room.
In your old home, did you have any?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
At what point do you think a person becomes comfortable putting erotic art in their home? What has got to be present? What has to happen for them to
Well, in my particular case, it's when all my nieces and nephews were of legal age, so I didn't have to worry about what their father had to say.
Okay.
And aside from that, then it's what I'm comfortable with because... Mm-hmm. I'm usually very comfortable around my real friends, and those are the people who are going to visit me in my home.
Mm.
And if I know people who are very uncomfortable with that kind of thing, well, we're going to sit in the living room, not the den, or we're going to sit in the den, not the living room, because there's very different art in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this one beautiful piece that I got at the Tickler One art auction of... It's very fantasy-like. It's a very, to me, it's a very erotic piece. It's a guy on a Pegasus, a pegacorn. He's on a flying Pegasus with a horn. It's a pegacorn, whatever. And he's in full leather.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very, very... erotic looking and very, you know, built and, you know, the six pack, the whole nine yards. Very, very, very rough. And yet he's reaching down to pull somebody up out of the, you know, the flames, so to speak, who's also not as
well endowed.
Yeah, well, yeah, not and not
well
as
constructed.
Not as fortunate as he is. In any way, not the way he looks, not the look on his face. Now, he's obviously had hard times. And this guy's reaching down and pulling him up into the, you know, and the color in it and so on. It's a huge piece. It takes up an entire wall in my living room. And not so much in the new house. But when I saw it, it was like, oh, God, I don't have art in the budget. But, you know... And it was a GCAM event, so I thought, you know. And fortunately, I think I was practically the only female there. But I was also practically the only person to whom it appealed. So I got it for a price I could afford, and it was like, and it hung right on the biggest wall in my living room,
mm-hmm.
In my other house. It won't necessarily be in the living room in the new place because I've already got a lot of art there. Put up, but yeah, I wouldn't take $1 million for that picture.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I have very varied tastes, you know. It's like leather fantasy to nudes, mm-hmm. in my house, to actually a seascape that my grandfather painted. So it was like, you never know.
Mm-hmm. The most I guess what percentage of people that you associate with, you hang out with, have erotic art in their house? A lot of
people? I would say probably, I mean, I haven't been in the houses of all of the people I know, but I would say probably of those houses I have been in, less than half.
Hmm. Okay, yeah. So that's pretty...
And not necessarily all the men I know. I have a couple of female friends. It's like, you can't get away from it. You know, anywhere you go. The bathroom, the bedroom, the living room, the kitchen.
Really?
The patio. You know? Love you dearly, Andy. And,
yeah.
But it's just, you know, and they entertain a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's, usually I think you hang out with people, kind of like-minded people, and what you're comfortable with, they're fairly comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Or you say, now, I have a lot of nudes in that room. If you don't want to go there, you know. And they have options.
Okay. So all the work that I saw that you'd done other than the abstract stuff was nudes. Do you... Have you done anything that goes down to, I don't know, leather or different venues? Is that right? Venues?
Venues,
different
aspects,
types,
of,
aspects
the community.
Of the community?
I haven't done anything with leather yet, except that one of the paintings, one of the male figures has a leather wristband on. No, I haven't painted anything with leather as a subject yet.
And you get into leather, you look at some sales.
Yeah, I know that's a whole new school. That's a whole different school of thought.
What else is there? Leather, come and help.
Levi's. Preppy.
Bondage?
Of course.
And
S&M. I mean, there's all kinds of things that.
Do you just keep on painting and painting and
exactly.
painting?
Exactly. Now, I have gotten three texts that say, tell Dan he has passion. Now, had this person been listening, they'd have known we said this at the very beginning on several occasions. But I have now told you have passion.
Thank you. I agree.
Well, I agree, too. Obviously, I wouldn't have said it at the beginning of the show, but, you know, I don't want him here.
So we have to ask, where's the passion come from?
I'm an adult male. I love life. I have a passion for life. I have a lot of passion. I mean, for a lot of different things. I love hard. I love freely. You know, I've loved often. I've loved many. And passionately. That's been a part of my nature. I don't take it for granted, because all people aren't passionate.
That's true.
And it doesn't matter how passionate their partner is. It doesn't make any difference. I mean, if they're not passionate, they're not going to give you that back.
Passion is not learned. It's you're born with it.
Yes. Yes. So it's going to come out in my art. It would come out if I were a performer. If I was an ice skater, it's going to come out. If you have it, it's going to come out in your work. Again, I'll pick on accountants.
Go ahead.
I don't think there's very much that's going to show in when you're doing a bank statement. Very much passion is going to be exhibited, but. Hopefully, when the poor guy gets away from those books and numbers,
well, you know, and
find a way to express it.
Numbers are his passion, but they're just not artistic to most of us, mm-hmm. you know. But you can't draw a pencil and pull out somebody's passion for math, mm-hmm. you know. So, I guess passion is in the heart of the beholder, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But in your case, it's definitely there in the art. World as opposed to the number world.
Mm-hmm. So you could paint anything, create anything you want to at this stage. You're very comfortable in your life, and you can go any direction you want to. But you chose erotic art.
Well, no, I didn't choose you necessarily. I chose to be an artist. I am an artist.
I'm not sure you chose to be an artist. It's like choosing to be gay.
I'm correcting. I chose to express myself through my art. And I had to learn to do abstract art. It didn't come naturally. I was trained as a classical painter, as a classical person who draws a figure. Like Michelangelo and Degas and Titian, people like that. That's how I was trained in art school, and it took me many years to be able to express myself in abstract form. And so most people who knew me and knew that I did realism knew me only to do realism. When people saw my abstracts, a whole another group of people, they didn't know, and nor did they believe that I did also the figure, the human figure. And that's because most artists are tight. Either they do one or the other. If they do abstract, they don't do realism. If they do realism, they don't do abstract. If they do seascapes or landscapes, they don't also do people. And that's just the way many artists are trained and many artists think. But I learned to do abstract in the later part of my life. And it comes very naturally because it's a wonderful way for me to express myself. And that's how abstract expression is done, is through expression. It's not representative. It's a feeling that you convey.
I know that artists do get kind of a, if you'll forgive me, bad rap in that, you know, oh, he does abstracts, oh, he does nudes, oh, he does trees, and so on. I'm not sure that every artist has the capabilities or can learn, bad word, to do some various forms of art. Now, again, I mentioned my grandfather earlier, and he was excruciatingly popular and sought after in Greece, where he did much of his art. He did seascapes and people. He never did the desert or horses or whatever. Seascapes and people, that was his thing. My sister is a very accomplished, untrained artist, and she does nudes and birds, but she will not do portraits or faces, a lot of faces in her pictures, because she doesn't like her faces. I don't really find a problem with them, but she does. So there are areas, I think, that most people are inhibited to some degree, so they never pursue it. And you are just such a free spirit that I'm not sure there's any portion of art that you wouldn't tackle or couldn't conquer, because I see it on all your canvases. Not, I don't think everybody has that capability. Mm-hmm. Take it as a compliment and be done with
it. I will take it as a compliment. Thank you. I will.
In case nobody out there has figured it out yet, I'm kind of partial to Dan's work. But don't tell him. He'll get a big head.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to maintain my 7 1/4 head size.
But I think your work needs to be seen. It deserves to be seen.
Thank you.
Is there anything you're particularly proud of? One particular piece?
I've met Danielle, yeah.
I'm sorry. What was the question?
I was just wondering if there's anything that you've done that you're very particularly proud of.
Not really. Yes, there is. I've got, and the reason I hesitated was because I had to remember that I have two pieces in my house that are not for sale, and that they are very, very dear to me. One is titled Snowstorm in Central Park, and it's an abstract piece, and another piece is titled The Lovers. And The Lovers shows three sets of couples as a triptych in varying stages of making love in different positions. And it's done relatively abstract as well as realistic. And it's very important to me. And again, getting back to the abstract of Central Park, I grew up as an adult in New York City, and I spent a lot of time in Central Park. And it's just a beautiful place down by the lakes and the boathouses in the winter. It's just gorgeous. I mean, you got people ice skating on the ponds out there. And the trees are beautiful in the winter when the snow is on the ground. And this is in an area right behind the Metropolitan Museum of Fine Art, down in the 70s, the 70s and 80s, off of Central Park West. And, off of Fifth Avenue, I'm sorry. and it's just gorgeous, and it brings back really nice memories when I was in art school and when I was a youngster, and I used to visit a lot of Central Park. So those two pieces are very important.
So I'd say the answer was yes.
Yeah, and you'll never sell them.
No, they're not for sale.
So there.
I'm intrigued.
There you go.
So how do you see them?
You got to get an invitation to his house somehow.
Ah, I see.
So.
I see.
Oh, y'all don't want to see me tomorrow.
Is there anything that embarrasses you? Is there anything...
Stupid.
I love him.
Yeah,
oh, geez.
I hate stupid.
No, well,
and there's so much of it in the world.
I know. That's where I draw. I have no patience, no tolerance, very little tolerance for stupid.
But he puts up
really?
With me well.
Okay.
I don't know if that's being embarrassed. No, I'm not embarrassed. I just dislike
embarrassed for the person who's stupid.
No,
you're just a little intolerant when they're around you.
Yeah. Stupid and small-minded people, really. I think stupid and small-minded are probably on equal par with my dislike.
Do you think you can be embarrassed if you're an artist? I mean, is actually see something that kind of like makes you want to shy away?
That's probably more personal. I think no, and it's nothing to do with me being an artist. I think it's very little shocks me or embarrasses me.
Okay.
But that's just me. I don't know if that has that much to do with me being an artist.
Mm.
I think that I've always been very broad-minded and open, and nothing really.
So you don't think being an artist makes you more receptive to all?
It helps. It helps because you get exposed to a lot. But
okay.
I think it's in you. It's in you. It's in you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're open and tolerant and to a degree, and you seek out new experiences, and you're not afraid, you're fearless about life, you could be a skateboarder and be the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's in you and you're an artist, that's good. I don't think you can be a successful artist and be afraid of everything
or anything.
Well, you're going to be most people are afraid of something.
No.
But if you just fear, I mean, there are people who just fear for nothing. They won't venture out beyond a little square box in their life. And they just fear, they just have all kinds of fears and they're easily intimidated. And you can't be an artist if you're like that. You really can't. Because to be an artist, you have to be willing to stretch and experiment and go beyond your own boundaries and when you cross that boundary, there's another boundary you have to be willing to go beyond that. And, I mean, figuratively as well as emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be willing to stretch yourself. And fearlessly. I mean, just step out. Just jump out. I mean, faith. That's what it takes. You just have to be willing to just step out on pure faith. I mean, who else would take the risk in their lives and say, in the parents' time, you know, you're not going to make a living, you're not going to have this, you're not going to have that, you're not going to have security, and you're willing to go and say, I believe that somebody's going to pay me because I can do this. You know.
Blind faith.
Yeah, you got to have a certain degree of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a big leap to go into erotic art?
Yes.
In what way?
Because that's a very, let me put it differently. The people who are going to express that they appreciate erotic art are very small.
Ah.
There are, people like it, but the people who admit that they like it,
that's even smaller group.
Yeah, that's a very small percentage of people. So even if they may come and love the work, they've got all kinds of reasons why they can't express it, they can't share it, they don't want to show it, they don't want to own it.
Well, and people are interesting because, like, Craig, for instance, was there tonight, and he was at your home the night we met, too. And I've always kind of felt or thought of Craig as a kind of a well-rounded, wide-open kind of guy when it came to many, many things. And art was one of them, you know, nudes, eroticism, you know, et cetera. And now I find out the only thing he likes is a naked behind, you know?
No, he didn't say the only. Like, he said his favorite.
Dan, this is the one. Dan, this is the one. Like, that's 14, this is the one. Well, they're all naked behind. I was like, okay. Did you see this one over here with the full frontal nudity and the guy with the tongue and the stuff like, this is a bat? And I was like, okay. I do believe we found Craig's crutch. You know? it's one thing to say, and that's true too. It's like, well, I like butts, or I like breasts, or I like, you know, length or width or breadth or whatever. But to say, oh, I like nudes, or I like the sexual act on canvas or whatever, people hesitate. They shy away from actually admitting that kind of stuff. It's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not saying Craig is shying away from the real thing. I'm just saying, God, what a passion for those things he's got.
Yeah, well, he did sort of fancy for the butt.
Yeah, thank
you. Well, it's kind of strange because you're like, eroticism is universal. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here.
That kind of goes with, yeah.
Yeah, but and yet you got this certain degree.
Well,
of
sex is universal.
Okay, sex.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be here, but eroticism is a different.
All right, we'll go down to that later, but then there's this sort of Puritan aspect to our little world here where people are.
There is that missionary position that no other.
Kind of constrained or restrained from expressing themselves.
Well, you're taught that. You are so taught that, you know, and. You've got to jump out of your own box when you're old enough to do those kinds of things, or when you start seeking out or seeing, or just however it comes to you, you know. You reach a point where it's like, well, Dad was a Republican, so I have to be. No, you get to be a self-thinker, I think. Never in a million years would we ever have seen one of Dan's pictures in my family home. Not because my mother didn't like it or my mother couldn't see any talent in abstracts, but my stepdad would have just balled up in a little hole in the corner somewhere and died if you thought about putting a half-nude person somewhere in the house, much less say, this is a man, they were married when I was 12, and I had known him many years before that, and they were married 35 years or whatever before they were killed, and it was like, this is a man who's still dressed in the closet,
mm-hmm.
you know, because somebody might walk in on him. So eventually, and his mother, he learned that from his mother, eventually you have to reach a point where you say, okay, by damn, I do like this. And I'm not afraid to say so.
Well, it's almost like people are much more afraid of sex than they are violence.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
Because they see
a lot.
Which
one's more dangerous?
They see a lot more violence than, it depends on the sex. Oh. They see a lot more violence than they see sex. So they become a little more immune to it. Boy, did we move off a new track there.
Mm.
But that's okay, Dan understands. No, what I'm saying. But no, you see violence everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't necessarily see either sex or eroticism or even emotion anywhere you go. And you can't appreciate things like Dan's art, in my humble opinion, unless you can appreciate emotion, your emotion, because you don't see the passion in it. So.
Yeah, there are a number of paintings in my collection that they're not. There's only one person,
mm-hmm.
just a man, in varying stages of life. I mean, he may be as coming out of a shower, towel wrapped around him, or in a shower, or.
That one with the blue with the guy in the shower. I mean, oh my God, that is so amazing. The agony in that picture. And then you look at it again, I'm like, oh my God, no, that's just like orgasm. You know, it's like, it depends on when you're looking at it and what's going on in your head as to where he is in that picture. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It'd be a great therapy piece.
One of the things I do is I name most of my work, and the name, sometimes naming it limits the viewer. Sometimes it creates more interest from the viewer because they say they can feel what the name implies. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they have their own idea of what the visual implies to them. And that's okay. The name is only the way the artist felt about the piece. It doesn't mean that that's the only name and that's the only explanation for this piece. So I think the one Judy is talking about is Crying. That's the name of it. That's my name for it. It's Crying. That's the one with the man, Judy, where he's standing with a towel wrapped around him. And
no, this is the one where he's actually in the shower. Yeah, there's water coming down on him.
Okay. I don't remember the name of that one, but I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah. That was kind of like they were almost a, I don't want to say a set, but yeah, they were similar. You know, like the one Jimmy bought tonight. It's like, he's going to probably rename it. I think Dan missed the mark on this one. He called it, I can't remember what it was.
Boy from Ipanema.
No, well, okay, the one he almost bought. He bought the Boy from Ipanema.
Oh, the other one was the guy's face. The blue one with the guy's face.
Yes.
That's, I don't remember the name of it either right now.
But I don't either, but he says, but that's the wrong. He's so-and-so. And I went, okay, whatever, you know. But, yeah, you don't really want to limit the person looking at the art. And yet, I look at the art for a long time before I look at the name. So I'm one of these opposite people. And then I think, and usually I can see it too. But I've already formed my opinion of where I am with it.
Good.
And what was Crying?
Crying was a man standing probably in a dressing area, and he's got a towel wrapped around his waist, and he's just standing there, like, looking at something, and his face is expression on his face is that he's very sad.
You want my opinion of that one? No. I love that one.
Hmm.
It's almost like, oh, should I just shut up and let you talk?
No, of course not.
No, I want to find out why he's crying.
It's like this guy is, he's not young. Uh-huh. I mean, I wouldn't say he's in his 70s or 80s, but he's not young. He's, you know, the six-pack is starting to kind of fade away in the bloat or whatever. You know, it's still there, but it's not as it used to be. And I'm thinking, this guy's at the baths. He's at the bathhouse. He's at the baths. And it's like he's sitting there looking over at the crowd, so to speak, and remembering when these young guys were flocking around him. And that day is past for him. He no longer can walk in and take his pick of the litter, so to speak, because now, you know, or maybe somebody just called him daddy or something.
Yeah.
Or
he
old man,
like,
or whatever.
He looks like he's in his mid-50s or something.
He's just past the prime where now he's a daddy. He's not, you know, the ruler of the roost. And it just hit him. He just made that connection mm-hmm. with himself. That's what that picture says to me.
It does say
And I'll
that.
Tell you what, I'm not a guy and I've never been to the baths and I've never thought that. So I have no idea where that comes from.
I think that's pretty accurate.
Thank you.
I could see that.
Yeah. It's torturous. And I've seen that look in friends. So it is a devastating thing. So say you can go and see Dan's art
at,
well, I don't know, tonight that's where it was. That's not where you see it all the time.
On the website?
On the website you can go, the
website is danhoustonartist.com.
Yeah. And is there an email address on your webpage or something that people might reach you?
There is.
There you go.
It is W-A-L.
Let Dan do it.
It's architectural wall decor.
Architectural wall decor. A wall decor?
A dot wall decor at comicast.net.
And that's been changed, but it's now architecturalwalldecor.com.
That's easier to remember than a dot. Yeah. Makes more sense. Okay. Yay. Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. So, plans for the future? Plans for the past?
Plans for the future to get more of our community exposed to my work.
And we're going to change calendar for that.
Okay. And to continue working and to continue exploring and just let people know what I'm doing, where I'm doing it, and let it take care of itself.
I have a feeling, even though the show and all that's over, Craig's still going to be emailing those butts out.
Exposing people to erotic art.
There you go. You know, we've all got a mission in life. That's Craig's.
Exposing people to erotic art. Or,
did you notice, Julie, that Craig repeated that one figure twice?
Yes. And it's like, all right, Craig, there are other parts of the body. You know, so it was like very exciting. So, my goodness, we've talked away the whole hour.
Have we?
Yes.
It's almost 2 o'clock?
Yes, it is.
Are people still up at this time?
Absolutely. Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
but I'm
see.
In the studio.
Well, of course people are still up. You want somebody to call you or what? Mm-hmm. But, yes, I'm sure that we will be keeping in touch and doing our best to further the cause, so to speak. But this has been an interesting alliance. We didn't have a lot of time to advertise this show.
The one that took place this evening?
This evening. It came on very quickly for GCAM.
Mm-hmm.
And there are reasons for that. But we're going to teach Dan the fine art of exposure in the gay community. Mm-hmm. And how slowly our ungreased wheels turn. And, you know, how we... Unfortunately, the majority of the community works on gay standard time. I do not do that well at all. Which means, basically, you know, we have a monthly periodical. We have things that come out every 2 weeks. We have things that... We have a thing that comes out, I think... It's not every 2 weeks. It's an odd schedule. I can't get the schedule in my head. And then we have the weekly things and so on. So we kind of have to teach Dan about deadlines and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But we're going to get there.
Okay. I have a quick question for you, Judy.
Uh-oh.
How do you feel that the women are going to react to the women arrows?
I actually think that the women's reactions will be stronger than the men's.
Really?
Yeah.
Stronger positive?
Oh, yeah.
Stronger negative? Just stronger positive, not stronger negative.
Stronger positive.
Yeah.
Because it's not something that's common. It's not to say men are boring or whatever, but you can see it. There are 9 million men's magazines out there full of photographs. There are people out there who do nudes and so on. What sets yours apart is the passion in them. Seriously. I know there are other passionate artists out there. I have never seen work that I consider, I mean, honestly, Remington did Soldiers and Horses and so on, and I would put you, and he's one of my favorite artists of the past, and I would put you more on his level than I would, you know, Dolly or someone. But I think the women will pounce on it because there's not that much out there. And the same passion, and this is what's so bizarre, the same passion is in your female art and your either heterosexual or bisexual, however people want to look at it, art, as in your male art. So I think it would be very well received in this community.
Well, I can promise you that I'm going to have more fun with the females.
Oh, yes, I bet you are. Mm-hmm. Well, I had a couple there tonight who are very anxious to see more. And one of the women that was there is very out in the community and has a lot of, you know, people that she can call upon to be a part of a female show. And helps me a lot with some things and so on. So she's a staunch GCAM volunteer as well as and appreciator of things like that. Well, Dan, appreciate you coming out tonight. I know it's
You're a little bit welcome.
Late. You got a little bit of a drive home, and it's been a big day for you. It's been a big week putting all that art up.
Yes,
and now
is.
You got to pull it down.
Yes.
But definitely appreciate you hanging in there and staying with us. And I think he's going to pretty well cut us off because we've talked to the very last second. But I hope you come back. We will talk more.
Great.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks,
Gloria,
Thank you.
For being in the corner awake and quiet. Take me away.
Hello, this is KPFT 90.1 Houston. And I'm Deloitte Parker, Executive Director of SHAPE Community Center. SHAPE, shaping history for the future. For over 33 years now, SHAPE has shaped history by actively working with issues important to all of us. The freeing of Nelson Mandela. The freeing of Clarence Brantley, death row inmate. The conviction and firing of the officers that killed Otto Delaney and Byron Gillam. Voter mobilization, anti-death penalty, police brutality cases, nutrition programs, legal clinics, cultural programs. All of these programs working to make life better for all of us today for tomorrow. For more information about SHAPE, call 713-521-0629. SHAPE Community Center, 713-521-0629. Thank you.
You may have been in your car looking for news coverage or some new music. Maybe you were at home flipping the dial looking for something different. Your radio may have settled on KPFT and stayed there. If you're new to this station, here's how community radio works. We rely on listeners, not advertisers, for the money that we use to operate our station. We hold membership drives a few times a year, and we ask for you to support our work with a pledge. If you give a call to 713-526-4000 and ask for the membership department, you can pledge an amount of your choice to support KPFT. You've come to rely on us, but we rely on you. That's 713-526-4000. Ask for the membership department and support KPFT. Or go to kpft.org to pledge. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
You're listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude here on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, 89.7 Huntsville, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
Good job on
that. See, people, the guy from Zydeco Pasale said, I heard your station ID, but you say it so fast you can't hear it. I said, well, I do it in one breath. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to work on it, and I'm able to still do it in the one breath and do it a lot slower.
And still do one breath?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's amazing how he does it.
Yeah.
I'm still single, and damn you, Craigslist, you're not helping me any. Damn you, Craigslist. And all the other websites. So where are we going?
We are going back in history.
Uh-oh.
It's that time.
History show.
Yeah, it's that time of year again.
Actually, you can go out.
We're on the air.
On the air.
Shh. Quiet. God, it wasn't that noisy in the movie theater I was in earlier.
Yeah, so we're gonna step back.
That was a noise that we can't do over the air anymore.
No. I was at the movie theater earlier today. It was really funny. I got to tell this cutesy story before we go to this.
Okay.
The bulb went out during the movie. So we're getting audio, but we're getting no video.
Uh-huh.
Oh, goodness.
And apparently no one is sitting up in the booth to know this. So some people left to go tell them. And in the meantime, people, their cell phones now have these lights on the back that are so bright. They're sitting back, you know, two-thirds of the way up the... in the audience like I am.
Yeah.
They turned their light towards the screen, and we had shadow puppet theater for 2 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, goodness.
while we were waiting for them to change the bulb or fix it, and it came right back on, and then the person must not have ran out immediately because a bunch of people started screaming, rewind, rewind. They went back to about 20-30 seconds before the bulb went out.
Oh
wow.
In the film, they just went, as they hit the button once, it went right to where we wanted to go.
Lovely.
There you go.
And it was like, okay, so we didn't miss any of the action that we
were hearing.
Yeah, it didn't help the plot any, that we were not losing any information, but I expected a lot more people in that theater.
And one less person, that little baby sitting at the end of my aisle.
Oh,
what was the movie?
Green Lantern.
Oh.
Yeah. I could tell at the beginning the little kid was gonna be noisy, and then like it's like, who the hell brings a 2 or 3 year old to a PG-13 movie to cry?
Oh well.
You couldn't get a sitter.
I don't know. But it is Pride, beginning of Pride Week.
Yes.
And so we have our traditional programming.
Yes, yes, we do. This is the history. This is the reason that we march
in June.
At the last Saturday in June, yes. It's a commemoration of the Stonewall Riots in New York City back in 1969. You know, people often talk about changing it to a changing our Pride Parade to a different time of year, and this is our Independence Day for GLBT people, and I'm thinking, you know, would you move the 4th of July to September just because it's cooler?
Well, you know, it scared me the one time with checking the Facebook pages. Mm-hmm. There's one person who's a friend of ours on Facebook. And who was making a comment about, you know, saying, you know, it's practically gay bashing doing the gay pride parade in June in Houston. And the conversation thread kept going. And it was like, everyone was agreeing, it's too damn hot. And it's like, I wanted to jump in and say, are you just being stupid? Or do you not realize why we do it at this time?
Exactly.
And like I said, it's one of the reasons it's going to end up me getting a Facebook page soon, because when I'm representing After Hours, I can't be my smart-ass, snarky self. And damn it, I need to have that outlet.
You do.
Especially when some drag queen is calling it gay bashing by doing a gay pride parade in June.
That's crazy. These are people who don't know their own history.
I'm hoping that it was just they were being funny.
And this is why we play this particular piece, because it was done, I want to say, 10 or 15 years after the riots themselves. Mm-hmm. And they interviewed not only people who were there, but they interview
some of the cops,
some of the cops. Yes.
You know, got both sides of what was going on.
While it was still more fresh and not mythical.
Yeah.
As, you know, the older this event gets, the more mythical it becomes. So,
you mean there weren't unicorns being ridden down Christopher Street goring police officers?
Not exactly. No.
They didn't have the pink elephants going down the street either?
No.
I'm disappointed.
It was a riot. It was a Stonewall was a tacky little bar. It had been raided once too often in the past several weeks, and for once, the customers rebelled, and that was something unheard of in the gay community. You kept things quiet. If somebody called you out, you just ducked your head and ran off. And this is the story of some brave people who stood up and said, I'm not going to take it anymore.
Because you have to realize at that time, if you were one of those who were arrested in that bar, the New York City papers would have a police blotter and say, Mr. John Smith of 123 Main Street, employed by Woolworths, was arrested in a gay bar drinking while homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
Or was arrested for wearing women's clothing in public.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes their pictures accompanied them.
Oh, yeah.
And that sort of thing was standard practice. You know, still see police blotters in the smaller newspapers. But that was the practice in the big cities at that time. And that's what people were afraid of, is I'm not going to make any trouble when the police come in. And hopefully they'll arrest the guy next to me and not me.
Exactly.
Because you could lose your job.
Oh, yeah. And many people did.
And everything because of that.
Yes.
And because remember, at that time, it was illegal to sell a homosexual a drink in New York.
Yep.
It was illegal to wear, not be wearing at least 3 articles of clothing germane to your sex.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the rules, the laws at the Stonewall, it was illegal to be dancing.
Yes.
In the Stonewall.
You could not dance. You could not dance with the same sex partner.
Well, no, it's not just that. You couldn't dance at all.
Oh, really?
It's actually one of the laws that's still in the books. You have to, from my understanding, in New York.
Oh, you have to have a dancing license.
You have to have a cabaret license.
Cabaret license, that's right.
To allow dancing.
Yes, yes.
Which is one of the reasons why they always say they unplugged the jukebox when the police came in, because the only reason you have a jukebox is so you could dance, and if you didn't have the cabaret license to dance, you didn't need the jukebox. So it was always unplugged when the raid occurred.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things you can get them for at that point.
Yeah.
So here's some of the history, and then we'll talk some more about the history that we know of it. And that, and some other stuff to get you in the mood for pride.
Listen close, kids.
Today, this white two-story building across from Sheridan Square in Greenwich Village is a clothing store and a closed Chinese restaurant. 20 years ago, this was the Stonewall Inn. I'm Michael Shirker, and I'm working on the first comprehensive history of the Stonewall riots. In 1969, the Stonewall was one of the most popular gay bars in New York City, and, like all other gay bars, was routinely raided by the Vice Squad. The patrons of these bars, many of whom were frightened at having their identities revealed, would quietly submit to any orders coming from the police. Yet, on June 27th, 1969, that all changed. The patrons of this bar, with the drag queens at the forefront, decided to fight back against the police. What happened here on that night would spark a revolution.
I am Gene Harwood, and my age is 80.
I'm Bruce Merrill.
He also would like to know what your age is. So you
my age, 78. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't know if it's really true, but now people do refer to us as the two oldest gay men in America. We do, have maybe a record relationship of almost 60 years together. Bruce's memory started going bad in 1984. Fortunately, we have our music together, which we've done over the years. We've written any number of songs. Bruce remembers the melodies very well and the lyrics of the songs.
When you touched me, when you took my hand, something happened I had never planned.
Being gay before Stonewall was a very difficult proposition, because we felt that in order to survive, we had to try to look and act as straight as possible. The general attitude of society, as far as employers were concerned and landlords, all of these people were very hostile, and to protect ourselves, we had to act as rugged and manly as possible to get by in
my name is Randy Wicker. I was the first openly gay person to appear on radio in 1962 and on television in 1964 as a self-identified homosexual. In the year before Stonewall, people felt a need to hide because of the precarious legal position they were in. They would lose their jobs. There was a great hostility, socially speaking, in the sense that people found out you were gay, they assumed you were a communist or a child molester or any of another dozen stereotypes that were rampant in the public media at the time.
I'm Jerry Fair, and I'm 80 years old. I started a gay lifestyle in 1948 when I was around 39 or 40. At that time, if there was even a suspicion that you were gay, that you were a lesbian, you were fired from your job, and you were in such a position of disgrace that you slunk out without saying goodbye even to the people that liked you and you liked. Never even bothered to clean your desk. You just disappeared. You just disappeared. You went quietly because you were afraid that the recriminations that would come if you even stood there and protested would be worse than just leaving.
My name is Sylvia Rivera. My name before that was Ray Rivera until I started dressing in drag in 1961. The era before Stonewall was a hard era. There was always the gay bashings on the drag queens by heterosexual men, women, and the police. We learned to live with it because it was part of the lifestyle at that time, I guess. But none of us were very happy about it.
My name is Seymour Pine. In 1968, I was assigned as deputy inspector in charge of public morals in the first division in the police department, which covered South Manhattan from 38th Street to the Battery, including the Greenwich Village area. It was the duty of public morals to enforce all laws concerning vice and gambling, including prostitution, narcotics, and laws and regulations concerning homosexuality. The part of the penal code which applied to drag queens was section 240.35, section 4. Being masked or in any manner disguised by unusual or unnatural attire or facial alteration, loiters, remains, or congregates in a public
place. At that time, we lived at the Arista Hotel. Try to figure out when this harassment would come to an end. And we would always dream that one day it would come to an end. And we prayed and we looked for it. We wanted to be human beings.
My name is Red Mahoney. I've been hanging out, drinking, partying, and working in the gay bars for the last 30 years. In the era before Stonewall, all of the bars, 90% of the bars, were mafia-controlled. They were controlled because the mafia had the right connections. There wasn't that many gay bars. It had maybe one, two uptown on the Upper East Side. They would get closed down, and there'd be one or two on the West Side. They'd get closed down, and Midtown, there'd be one, two, three, maybe open. As they would get closed down, they'd move around, and they would dump.
I'm Joan Nessel, co-founder of what is now the largest collection of lesbian culture in the world. The police raided lesbian bars regularly, and they did it. They both did it in the most obvious way, which was hauling women away in paddy wagons. But there was regular weekend harassment, which would consist of the police coming in regularly to get their payoffs. And in the Sea Colony, we had a back room with a red light. And when that red light went on, it meant the police would be arriving in around 10 minutes. And so we all had to sit down at our tables. And we would be sitting there almost like school children. And the cops would come in. Now, depending on who was on, which cop was on, if it was some that really resented the butch women, who were with many times very beautiful women, we knew we were in for it, because what would happen is they would start harassing one of these women and saying, "Hi, you think you're a man? Come outside, we'll show you." And the woman would be dragged away. They'd throw up against a wall, and they'd say, "So you think you're a man? Let's see what you got in your pants." And they would put their hand down her pants.
The Stonewall, oh, that was a good one. That was. Just to get into the Stonewall, you'd walk up and you'd knock on the front door. You'd knock and the little door would open and, "Hey, what do you want?" "A Mary sent me." "Good. Come on in, girls." You know, when you walked in, to your right was your barroom, no windows. Down at the far end of the bar was an opening in the wall going into the dance room with the jukebox in that room, and no windows in that room either. The stone wall, like all gay bars at that time, were painted black. Charcoal black. And what was the funny part? The place would be so dimly lit, but as soon as the cops are going to come in to collect their percentage or whatever they were coming in for, from it being a nice, dimly lit dump, the place was lit up like Luna Park.
You felt, well, two guys, and that's very often all we sent in would be two men, could handle 200 people. I mean, you tell them to leave, and they leave, and you say, show me your identification, and they all take out their identification and file out, and that's it. And you say, okay, you're not a man, you're a woman, or you're vice versa, and you wait over there. I mean, this is a kind of power that you have, and you never gave it a second thought.
The drag queen took a lot of oppression, and we had to... We were at a point where I guess nothing would have stopped us. I guess, as they say, or as Shakespeare says, we were ladies in waiting, just waiting for the thing to happen. And when it did happen, we were there.
On Friday night, June 27, 1969, at about 11:45, eight officers from Public Morals 1st Division loaded into four unmarked police cars. From their headquarters on 21st Street and 3rd Avenue, they headed downtown and then west towards the Stonewall Inn here at 7th Avenue and Christopher Street. It was the second time the bar was raided that week. The local 6th Precinct had just received a new commanding officer who kicked off his tenure by initiating a series of raids on gay bars. And New York was in the midst of a mayoral campaign, always a bad time for homosexuals. Mayor John Lindsay had good reason to agree to the police crackdown. He had just lost his party's primary and needed a popularity boost. And the Stonewall Inn was indeed an inviting target. Operated by the Gambino crime family without a liquor license, this dance bar drew a crowd of drag queens, hustlers, minors, and more masculine lesbians known as bull dykes. Many were black or Hispanic. It was a warm night in New York City and a somber day for many. Judy Garland, who had died earlier in the week, was buried that morning. It was almost precisely at midnight that the Moral Squad pulled up to the Stonewall Inn, led by Deputy Inspector Seymour Pine.
There was never any reason to feel that anything of any unusual situation would occur that night.
He could actually feel it, yeah. He really could. I guess Judy Garland's death just really helped us really hit the fan.
For some reason, things were different this night. As we were bringing the prisoners out, they were resisting.
People started gathering in front of the Sheridan Square Park right across the street from Stonewall. People were upset. No, we're not going to go. And people started screaming and hollering.
One drag queen, as we put her in the car, opened the door on the other side and jumped out. At which time we had to chase that person, and he was caught, put back into the car. He made another attempt to get out the same door, the other door, and at that point we had to handcuff the person. From this point on, things really began to get crazy.
My name is Robert Rivera, and my nickname is Birdie, and I've been cross-dressing all of my life. I remember the night of the riots. The police were escorting the queens out of the bar and into the paddy wagon. And there was this one particularly outrageously beautiful queen with stacks and stacks of Elizabeth Taylor-style hair. And she was asking them not to push her. And they continued to push her, and she turned around and she matched the cop with her high heel. She knocked him down, and then she proceeded to frisk him for the keys to the handcuffs that were on him. She got them, and she undid herself and passed them to another queen that was behind her.
Well, that's when all hell broke loose at that point. And then we had to get back into the Stonewall.
My name is Howard Smith. On the night of the Stonewall riots, I was a reporter for the Village Voice, locked inside with the police, covering it for my column. It really did appear that crowd, because we could look through little peepholes in the plywood windows, we could look out, and we could see that the crowd, well, my guess was within 5-10 minutes, it was probably several thousand people.
She was calling me from the
2,000, easy. And they were yelling, kill the cops, police brutality, let's get them, we're not going to take this anymore, let's get them.
Noticed a group of persons attempting to uproot one of the parking meters in which they did succeed. And they then used that parking meter to as a battering ram to break down the door. And they did, in fact, open the door. They crashed it in. And at that point was when they began throwing Molotov cocktails into the place. It was a situation that we didn't know how we were going to be able to control.
I remember someone throwing a Molotov cocktail. I don't know who the person was, but I mean, I saw that, and I just said to myself in Spanish, I said, oh my God, the revolution is finally here. And I'm just like, started screaming, freedom. We're free at last, you know, and it felt really good.
There were a couple of cops stationed on either side of the door with their pistols, like in a combat stance, aimed in the door area. A couple others were stationed in other places behind, like a pole, another one behind the bar, all of them with their guns ready. I don't think up to that point I had ever seen cops that scared.
Remember, these were pros, but everybody was frightened. There's no question about that. I know I was frightened. And I've been in a combat situation, and there was never any time that I felt more scared than I felt that night. And, I mean, there was just, you know, there was no place to run.
When the Moral Squad officers barricaded themselves inside the Stonewall, Deputy Inspector Pine put in a 1041 call, an emergency help request which can only be placed by a high-ranking officer. That call was mysteriously canceled, and the telephone inside the Stonewall went dead. It took nearly 45 minutes for the riot police to get to the Stonewall and rescue the Moral Squad from the smoldering bar.
Once the tactical police force showed up, I think that really incited us a little bit more.
My name is Martin Boyce. In 1969, I was a drag queen known as Miss Martin. I remember on that night, when we saw the riot, because all of us drag queens, we didn't dance like the Rockettes and sang the song we used to sing. We are the village girls. We wear our hair in curls. We wear our dungarees above our Nelly knees. And the police went crazy hearing that, and they just immediately rushed us. We gave one kick and fled.
My name is Rudy, and the night of the Stonewall, I was 18. And to tell you the truth, that night I was doing more running than fighting. I remember looking back from 10th Street. And there on Waverly Street, there was a police, I believe, on his cop, and is on his stomach in his tactical uniform and his helmet and everything else, with a drag queen straddling him. She was beating the hell out of him with her shoe. Whether it was a high heel or not, I don't know. But she was beating the hell out of him. It was hysterical.
My name is Mama Jean. I'm a lesbian, and I guess you would label me as a butch. I remember on that night, I was in a gay bar, a women's bar, called Cookies. We were coming out of the gay bar, going toward 8th Street. And that's when we saw everything happen. Blasting away, people getting beat up. Police coming from every direction. Hitting women as well as men with their nightsticks. Gay men running down the street with blood all over their face. We decided right then and there whether we were scared or not. We didn't think about it. We just jumped in.
But here, this queen is going completely bananas, you know, jumping and hitting the windshield. And next thing you know, the taxi cab was being turned over, or the cars were being turned over. Things, windows were shattering all over the place. Wires were burning around the place. It was beautiful. It really was.
I remember one cop coming at me, hitting me with the nightstick in the back of my legs. I broke loose and I went after him. I grabbed his nightstick. My girlfriend went behind him. She was a strong 7'10". I wanted him to feel the same pain I felt. And I kept on saying to him, "How do you like the pain? Do you like it? Do you like it?" I kept on hitting him and hitting him. I was angry. I wanted to kill him. At that particular minute, I wanted to kill him.
I wanted to do every destructive thing that I could think of at that time to hurt anyone that had hurt us through the years.
It's like just when you see a man protecting his own life. They weren't the queens that people call them. They were men fighting for their lives. And I fight alongside them any day, no matter how old I was.
A lot of heads were bashed. But it didn't hurt their true feelings. They all came back from war. Nothing, that's when you could tell that nothing could stop us at that time, but any time in the future.
The media covered the riot extensively. The Daily News featured it on its front page. There were reports on all the local television and radio stations. By the next day, graffiti calling for gay power had appeared on buildings and sidewalks all over the West Village. Hastily worked up flyers distributed on street corners touted the night as the hairpin drop heard round the world. And the next night, thousands of men and women converged on the West Village. They came here, back to the Stonewall, to see what would happen next. While trash cans were set on fire, stones were thrown, and sporadic fighting broke out between police and gays, the more than 400 riot police milling around the village ensured that the previous night's violence would not be repeated. But on this night, for the first time, gay couples could be seen walking hand in hand or kissing in the streets. Just by being there, surrounded by reporters and photographers and onlookers, thousands of men and women were proclaiming to themselves and the rest of the world that they were gay. And the crowds grew and came back the next night, and for one more night the following week. What happened here on those nights helped to usher in a new era, both personally and politically, for gay men and lesbians.
Oh. When Stonewall happened, Bruce and I were still in the closet, where we had been for nearly 40 years. But we realized that this was a tremendous thing that had happened at Stonewall, and it gave us a feeling that we were not going to be remaining closeted for very much longer. And soon thereafter, we did come out of the closet.
My name is Ginny Apuzzo. In 1969, I was in the convent. I was in the Sisters of Charity. And when Stonewall hit the press, it hit me with a bolt of lightning. It was as if I had an incredible release of my own outrage at having to sequester so much of my life. I made my way down. I seem to recall in subsequent nights being down on the, you know, kind of just in the periphery looking, observer, clearly an observer, clearly longing to have that courage to come out. And it was only a matter of weeks before I left the convent and
I've started a new life.
I'm Henry Baird. In 1969, I was in the U.S. Army, a Specialist 3 stationed at Long Binh Post near Saigon in Vietnam. I remember I was having lunch in the Army mess, reading the Armed Forces news summary of the day. And there was a short paragraph describing a riot led by homosexuals in Greenwich Village against the police. And my heart was filled with joy. I thought about what I had read frequently, but I had no one to discuss it with. And secretly within myself, I decided that when I came back stateside, if I should survive to come back stateside, I would come out as a gay person. And I did.
For those of us in public morals, after the Stonewall incident, things were completely changed from what they had previously been. They suddenly were not submissive anymore. They now suddenly had gained a new type of courage. And it seemed as if they didn't care anymore about whether they were whether their identities were made known. We were now dealing with human beings.
My name is Jim Forat, and I'm in the mid-60s, along with Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin. I was one of the founders of the Yippie movement. I remember on the third night of the riots, there was this meeting called by Mattachine Society at St. John's Church on Waverly Place. We went, and Randy Wicker was running the meeting.
For 10 years, I've been going on television as Randy Wicker, the respectable homosexual dressed in dark suit and tie, explaining to people that most homosexuals look like everybody else and behave like everybody else. And when Stonewall began happening, you had chorus lines of Queens kicking their heels up at the police and bonfires burning in the corner trash baskets and throwing bricks and stones at the police. I was horrified because this violated everything that we thought of as responsible behavior, that this was not the way respectable citizens behaved.
Evelyn Hooker was a sociologist, I believe. Randy had introduced her, and she got up and she suggested that we should have a candlelight march, that we should turn the other cheek because gay people were really different, we were really nice, and we had to show how nice we were and stop all this rioting because people were going to get hurt. I remember I stood up and I said, no, we are not going back. And people felt the same thing I felt. And we marched out of that room, and that was the night that the Gay Liberation Front was born.
Today I live in a senior citizen apartment building. What's different now is that I can be free. I have a daughter who's a senior citizen, and my son is 58. They know about my homosexuality. My three grandchildren in their 30s know about their grandmother. I have a great-granddaughter who, at the age of 10, learned that Grandma Jerry was a lesbian, and she thought that was most interesting. And yet, I still don't have the personal courage to not care if these yentas in the building know that Jerry's a lesbian.
Well, I retired from the police department in 1976. 20 years have passed. I'm going to be 70 in a few months. I still don't know the answers. I would still like to know the answer. I would like to know whether I was wrong or whether I was right in ever thinking that there was a difference, and ever thinking that maybe you shouldn't trust a homosexual because something is missing in his personality.
The archives of lesbian culture, which surrounds us now and was created 4 years after Stonewall, owes, at least for my part, its creation to that night and the courage that found its voice in the streets. That night, in some very deep way, we finally found our place in history. Not as a dirty joke, not as a doctor's case study, not as a freak, but as a people.
Remembering Stonewall was engineered by Spider Blue. It was produced by David Isay with a grant from the Pacifica National Program Fund. I'm Michael Shirker.
Today I'm a 38-year-old drag queen. I can keep my long hair, I can pluck my eyebrows, and I can work wherever the hell I want. And I'm not going to change for anybody. If I change, then I feel that I'm losing what 1969 brought into my life. And that was to be totally free.
How can I ever close the door and be the same as I was before? Darling, no, no, I can't anymore. It's true, they
Judy Garland with Over the Rainbow, like we had to tell you.
Yeah, I figured that was an appropriate end to that 30-minute segment we had there.
Yeah, with our traditional Stonewall. Because, like I said, a lot of people want to know why we, why we're out in June, why we go through the Bar District. A couple years ago, my straight brother asked me why... Why is the Pride Parade down in the Bar area, not like every other parade we have in Houston being downtown? And it's because we're celebrating the area that we come from in this in the city, our gayborhood, as it's called, our ghetto, gay ghetto. But it reminds us of the fact that our starting point for our first time standing up, saying that we deserve to be treated as a human being, didn't happen at City Hall, didn't happen at a state capitol. It was in a seedy little bar that, for some reason, whether it's because Judy Garland's funeral was earlier in the day and there was a Judy Garland song playing on the jukebox, as some of the mythology says, or if it just they got tired of being pushed around and harassed, because it wasn't just illegal to be gay. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that it still was illegal to be gay here in the United States. But it was the other parts of the law that interfered with it, that made it worse and made it easier to harass these people and to try and humiliate them for taking a moment to be who they are. The other thing I could say is that at that time it was illegal to sell alcohol to an avowed homosexual. And straight bars didn't really enforce that law. It was at the gay bars that they did. And just jokingly, of course, because at the time, since it was illegal to sell alcohol to a homosexual, then the bars that were gay bars then were mainly run by the mafia. So you thought you pay a lot for a drink now. Imagine getting that illegal alcohol drink in a bar run by the mafia in New York in the late 60s. It was watered down. It was not the best, and you paid topless club pricing for it.
Yep.
And that's basically that's where we started from. We're talking about that play, Temperamentals, about the Medicine Society, and it's not the Medicine Society was a gay group that basically their philosophy was, we're just like you, so treat us like you would. And when they went out to protest and worked with the Daughters of Bilitis, the women all wore dresses and got gussied up and, tried to look as feminine as possible. The men all had to wear the dark suits and the white shirts and not do anything to offend people, because basically they wanted to say, we're just like you, so treat us that way. And our revolution didn't start with those people. It was the hustlers, it was the drag queens, it was the bull dykes, who one hot, steamy night in New York City decided, we're not going to take this crap anymore. And pride is an important thing to people when they look at it and they study it and they know why we're here, why we're doing what we do. And there's a lot of talk about the homogenization of pride and how we're turning it into a product and trying to make it look sanitized for everyone, that we can get all the people out there. Where nowadays the church groups and politicians outnumber the bars and the clubs. And it's not where we were. That's not where we came from. And it's amazing to see how it's done elsewhere. There's a movie on Showtime. I forget what the full part. I know the subtitle of it's called "The Politics of Pride," and I started watching a little bit of it, and I was like, "I'm just going to record it the next time." And I ended up watching the whole thing. And it's a documentary done by some people from Vancouver Pride, And the executive director of Vancouver Pride, and so he went out to other Pride parades around the world to see what it's like, how it's done elsewhere, and what they do. And it's interesting seeing, especially the Eastern European, where they're trying to get it to happen, where you've got the Pride Parade in Warsaw, where you've got protesters from neo-Nazi groups and the religious right combining to protest the gay Pride Parade, and seeing all these young, late teens, early 20s, testosterone-filled, angry men bouncing, jumping up in the air in anger at this, and watching these people, watching the gay community still put on a parade. You've heard of the problems in Moscow doing Pride. Lieutenant Dan Choi was arrested in Moscow doing a gay Pride, trying to do a gay Pride event this year. They showed how they did it 1 year when they were there, and basically said, we're going to go meet in front of City Hall and have this gay Pride rally. And while all the attention was there, they held a small run at the Tchaikovsky Conservatory, held a small gay Pride rally, had some of the press there, and walked maybe a block. And that was the first time they had a nonviolent gay Pride march in Moscow. And that's how they had to do it. And then when it was announced over at City Hall that this happened, they showed some people that had unfurled a banner for saying gay rights and a guy throwing eggs at it. And then one of the spokespeople for Moscow Pride said, yeah, we had this event over at this other place. That's what we did. And they watched him being beaten by four or five thugs. And the police took him into custody. And they called it a victory afterwards because he was released shortly afterwards. So normally they hold us for a day or two. Wow. But this time they let us go. And then they show going down to Sao Paulo, Brazil. Of course, New York Pride. And Vancouver. And there's two things I like what they showed at Sao Paulo Pride Parade and Vancouver Pride that they do. In Sao Paulo, they all of their floats are basically the big kind of double-decker bus type setups with people dancing on them and music playing and all that other stuff. But in Sao Paulo, what they also do is there's one bus that comes down that's not decorated. And it's playing music, but there's nobody on the float. And that is in honor of those who are no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's HIV/AIDS, whether it's homophobic attacks, or whatever. That was basically the float for their spirits.
Wow.
Which is what I thought was very powerful. And then in Vancouver, and I think they do this in some other cities too, during the parade, at a certain given point, an announcement goes out to all of them, and this... like on our parade route where they have the people, the marshals with, you know, telling you to stop or go, they have large white flags.
Mm-hmm.
And they raise it up at this one point, and the parade stops and goes quiet for 1 minute in respect for those who are no longer there.
Wow.
And that, I mean, that is something, I mean, it's powerful and interesting to see that it's not as commercial everywhere. That it's not, you know, I understand there's the need for those commercial sponsors because they help pay for us to put on this event, to pay for the police officers, to pay for the barricades, to pay for everything. But the simple humanity of what this is, of why we're there and what we're doing, is something interesting to watch. And I highly recommend it. Apparently, Showtime has gone gay. I mean, the amount of programming that I've been seeing on there this past week, I think it was Friday night, Thursday or Friday night, I was flipping through, and it seemed like everywhere I saw on Showtime, on the 20-something channels they have, was some sort of gay program, whether it was the Times of Harvey Milk, there's a Susan Wiesenthal comedy special on, the politics behind Pride, all this stuff, and it's like, damn, they're Showtime's going more gay than their little sister logo. That's an interesting thing to see how we've come on this, and we you know, this is a big thing where we're getting ready for the Pride Parade next week. Earlier, we were sketching out what we're going to be doing on this, because this is the first time we're putting together the float in our vision, or lack thereof. Because it's been a while since I've been part of the decorating part of the float. We used to tease on those, especially with the community center, because I was one of the first tenants in the original GLBT community center, and rode with them several years. And I tease with them always. It was like, you know, okay, the lesbians build the float and the gay men decorate it. That's how it worked. And it worked well for us. But the only lesbian we have with our show is Judy, and that's not going to be much help. But, you know, it's you have to sit and think and realize where we came from on this. And for the young people out there, take a moment, Google Stonewall. Google the history. Find these movies. You know, if you're on Netflix, go out there and get some of the movies, some of the documentaries out there. You know, just don't get Milk. Get the Times of Harvey Milk. Get the movie Stonewall. Get some of the things that are looking on online. My coming out process, I went out and bought the books. I went out and bought the Gay Almanac. You know, the Celluloid Closet, the Unofficial Gay Manual, to learn what part of the community I was discovering I was a part of. And that's how you be a part of it. That's the first part. And you also have to remember this, that Pride isn't just this one day, this one Saturday in June. It's not the week before. It's not the month of. It's something you need to carry year-round. It's something you need to be a part of. And we know for a lot of people you can't. It's difficult to. And hopefully, you know, you'll be able to join us one day on the parade route or in the parade. And we understand if it may not be now, it may not be ever. But we're there for you, like we said at the beginning of the show. We're here especially for y'all. And we hope that Stonewall, the remnants that we played there, let you know where we came from. The hairpin drop heard around the world. You know, the American Revolution was called the gunshot heard around the world. Ours was the hairpin drop. And, you know, we have to remember that we are standing on the shoulders and the graves of greats who went through a whole lot of crap so that we could walk into a bar and we can hold hands walking in the streets. And it's, you know, it's good to take a reflective moment of where we've been. And you'll see that some with the parade. One of the things you will see some of the people do, is you'll especially see our float do that, is when we pull in front of Mary's and we stop and we will bow in reverence to our little dive of a bar that was traditionally raided before Pride, the week before Pride Parade. It was almost a custom for a while, for several years, for there to be a raid on Mary's a week or two before the Pride Parade. It's tradition. And so we will bow in reverence to Mary's, the great bar that is no longer a part of our community, but a part of our spirit, and see what happens with that piece of property once the new ownership takes over with it. But we're coming up here to the top of the hour. We're going to try and do some, probably do some music here for a little bit, because I, as I said, I had, I didn't get anything that moved me for Roundtable. We'll talk about some things. I think we'll talk a little bit about some of the Prop 8 stuff that happened this past week. Maybe we'll touch on Wiener a little bit.
You're going to touch a Wiener?
I hope, but I know it's not going to happen.
Oh.
But, you know, we'll go through and find some of the stories of the day, because a lot of the bloggers are actually at a conference up in Minneapolis right now, so things are a little light on that. So let's do our PSAs, top of the hour. We'll probably put some important music in our ears, and come back with a little bit of Roundtable and some just general talk.
Montgomery County Youth Services is offering a mentoring program serving children of prisoners. Children served in this program are between the ages of 4 and 14 and must live in the Montgomery County. Matches are carefully made based on common interests, personality, and geographic area. Mentors help the child focus on improving academic and social skills and developing a positive self-image while increasing exposure to cultural opportunities. Mentors who can commit to the program for at least 1 year are also needed. For guidelines and more information on this program, please contact Kim Birdwell at 281-292-6471. That's 281-292-6471. This is KPFT Houston.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio. Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them. A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio. With such mediocrity, improvement of radio is utopian. When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better. Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community. But maintaining this sort of radio requires you. Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource. So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today. You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge. Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come. So call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
And you are listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, here on listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and 89.7 Huntsville, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. Like I said, we're going to go a little bit of music here, and I think what I want to do is pull from this one CD collection Jimmy's got here to play a couple songs. It's called Club Verboten. Out of oppression came some of the richest and most popular music and entertainers of the world. And it's a compilation, it's a 4-CD set of queer artists, queer music. That's just, it's an interesting collection. And I've got a book in here that explains the times and what went through and where it came from. So I'm going to start, actually, CD 1, song 1. And let's see if I can get here to the page on why this song, let's get past the Judy Garland section of these songs. Oops, it doesn't really explain where it's, where it goes. Here we go. It's from the 20s. What I'm going to start off with on here is Masculine Women, Feminine Men. Merritt Brunez and his Friars Inn Orchestra. With lyrics saying you can't tell which is which in all the gender bending today, this selection is especially interesting way of musically opening this collection. Back in the 20s, it was underground. Today, it's a daily parade. That's quite a change. So here it is, Masculine Women, Feminine Men.
A crazy guy, to me he means a million other things. For he's the one who taught this happy heart of mine to fly. He wears a pair of silver wings. And though it's pretty tough, the job he does above, I wouldn't have him change it for a king. An ordinary fellow in the uniform I love, he wears a pair of silver wings. Why, I'm so full of pride when we go walking. Every time he's home on leave, he with those wings on his tunic, and me with my heart on my sleeve. But when I'm left alone and we are far apart, I sometimes wonder what tomorrow brings. For I adore that crazy guy who taught my happy heart to wear a pair of silver wings. For I adore that crazy guy who taught my happy heart wear a pair of silver wings.
She was a big, tough woman, the first to come along, that showed me it on my locker, and I carved it on my desk, and I painted big red hearts with her initials on my books, and I never knew till later why I got those funny looks. She was a big, tough woman, the first to come along, that showed me being female, but just still could be strong, and though graduation meant that we had to part, while the others talked of boys that they loved, I'd be thinking of new aches and pains a teacher had to rub. And while other girls went to the prom, I languished by the phone, calling up and hanging up if I found out she was home. She was a big time woman, the first to come along, that showed me everything. A new chain for her whistle and some daisies in the spring. Some suggested points for Christmas by Miss Edna Millay. And a lacy, lacy, lacy card for Valentine's Day. Unsigned, of course. She was a big time woman. Sticks to teacher like a leaf sticks to a tree. One girl who runs the errands and who chases all the balls. One girl who may grow up to be the gayest of all. She was a big star woman, the first to come along. It's
That was Sylvester without Tweety.
Suffering, Thakadesh.
Oh, gee.
You open the door. That'll teach
how
you.
How gay stereotypical. He's lisping.
Like I said, you open the door, so that'll teach you.
Yeah. I grabbed four songs off of the Club Verbodend CD collection. I like going to this one of that Jimmy has in here because it's interesting the songs you have from different generations, and they split everything up with the years that they come in here. We start off with one from the 20s there of masculine women, feminine men.
That's a classic. And a lot of the songs on that aren't necessarily gay or by gay artists, but during their era, they were anthems for the community, such as it was.
Kind of like You Make Me Feel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that, yeah. And stuff, he was gay, but...
Yeah, but still it was an anthem.
Yes.
Well, I guess I read the part about that, you know, talking about the gender bending of the time there. The next one I played was... Where's the description of it?
Yes.
I've got to find it in here.
One of the ones in particular is Doris Day doing Once I Had a Secret Love.
Hmm.
And that was huge in the community in the 50s. Because it was... you could just pin it right down to gay people.
The second one I played was from the Kay Kaiser Orchestra. He Wears a Pair of Silver Wings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a World War II love song, but here curiously interpreted by a male singer with the famous Kay Kaiser Orchestra. As with the previous song, the explanation for this could be that the 20s, the 40s, music publishers often forbade any form of lyric changes in their songs, including right. gender.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the things we like about some of the songs we play, like Jeff Krasner singing Son of a Preacher Man.
Exactly.
That you're not changing the words, mm-hmm. but it has a whole different meaning when it's coming out of a male
it does.
Voice.
It
does. Let's see.
I know we once played a song from that era by Bing Crosby where the gender was not changed. And so, you know, it sounds like he's singing to a man.
Then after that was Ode to a Gym Teacher by Meg Christian.
Ah, classic.
While not the first, Olivia Records is the foremost label for women's music, mostly lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
One of its co-founders is Meg Christian. This live recording is not only a lot of fun, but certainly interesting to hear the laughter from the female audience. All groups have a humor unique to them, and this engaging performance makes the song and the performer even more special.
It does. It does. I like that version.
And we followed the last one we played in that set was You Make Me Feel Mighty Real by Sylvester. An outwardly gay disco favorite, some could say diva, Sylvester crossed over and was equally welcome in the straight bars as well.
Mm-hmm.
Artists like him shattered the rules at disco clubs, were often a mix of straights and gays having a great time, a situation that many would not have imagined as short as a decade before.
Yeah, you're right.
And like that's what I like about this collection that Jimmy has on here is in, you know, it goes through the modern ones. There's a whole CD mm-hmm. of classical music.
Yes.
A lot of Tchaikovsky.
Oh, yeah.
In there. And some different, you know.
And now those are all gay composers.
Yes.
Or bisexual composers.
Like I said, I really like, you know, in a pinch pulling out this set. And, you know, instead of Sylvester, I almost played, like, you know, a more popular one that was known there, Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild
Side.
Oh,
yeah, that was huge.
You know, just, and, you know, it's...
And then in that, he talks about Joe D'Alessandro, one of the most famous hustlers from the 60s, he talks about, and Lil Joe would never give it away.
So I mean, that's I want to hit some of the classic of where, you know, some of the songs they might have been playing,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing, and the clubs or little speakeasies of the time, where
the dirty, naughty homosexuals meant to...
Oh, yes.
...to talk and be...
Do their homosexual things.
Yes. A couple of things that happened this past week. We seem to get some good news this past week on a couple of fronts there.
Oh, yeah?
Prop 8 news. Mm-hmm. There was a lawsuit filed by the people who put Prop 8 into effect.
Yeah.
Wanting to vacate the order by Judge Vaughn Walker on the grounds that he did not disclose that, A, he's homosexual, and, B, he's been in a long-term relationship. And maybe that's why he decided to... say that, or to rule that Prop 8 was unconstitutional,
mm-hmm.
was his own personal bias to it.
How'd that work out for him?
Well, the judge who heard it, one of the questions I heard that he asked the Prop 8 lawyers was, if this was a civil rights case, would you ask a black judge to recuse himself?
Ooh.
And they said, no. And I said, well, then what's the difference? You know, just because he's gay, been in a long-term relationship, there's no evidence that he wants to marry his boyfriend or his partner, however, whatever terminology you'd like to use.
True.
And so the judge said, you know, upheld Judge Walker's ruling, so it'll go to the next level of appeals, as all this crap seems to do.
If they decide to pursue it.
Well, it's not a government issue to run it. It is private citizens who are fighting this and trying to get his part there. So mm-hmm. there's still the original case that's working its way through the system.
But what if they decide not to pursue it? What happens then?
Then they can't raise money against gay marriage if they're not going to go any further.
Well, that's what I mean. What if they just give up?
They won't.
Okay.
These are these
until it gets up to the Supreme Court, which may refuse to hear it.
Of course.
And then what happens?
Well, it depends on who was last, who had the last verdict.
Mm.
You know, it can go back and forth. Well, that's how it is. You could either go back and forth. You know, the ruling can stand and keep standing and standing and standing, and we get to the Supreme Court and they say, you know, we don't want to hear the case, mm-hmm. then it defers to whatever the last ruling was, which is, you know, the last one standing.
Okay. Wow.
It might be easier to get a bone away from a pit bull than to get the oh-so-conservative and uber-Christian types to let go of the whole gay marriage thing.
Because they need it as a wedge.
Yeah.
It ain't working, folks.
And it's working less and less with every passing year.
That's right. That's right.
The other news came out of the United Nations, where the United Nations officially recognizes LGBT people for the first time ever.
Hmm.
Friday, the United Nations passed its very first resolution based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The resolution concludes that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights will be extended to include LGBT individuals, declaring that there should be no violence or discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity.
Woohoo!
The historic resolution was presented by South Africa and Brazil, with 39 additional co-sponsors from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Dawn Kavanaugh from the Coalition of African Lesbians said, "The South African government has now offered progressive leadership after years of troubling and inconsistent positions on this issue of sexual orientation and gender identity. Simultaneously, the government has set a standard for themselves in international spaces. We look forward to contributing to and supporting sustained progressive leadership by this government and seeing the end of the violations we face daily.
I'm really surprised. I had no idea that this would be the first time.
Well, I think that they've tried putting it through before, and, you know...
Oh.
The way the United Nations works is so many things can be vetoed down and stopped by the big dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're not interested, they can say, you know, we don't even want to talk about this. Mm-hmm. And it goes away.
Yeah. It was actually a very close vote.
Really?
Yeah. 23-19.
Wow.
I said this was the Human Rights Council. Supporting the resolution were Argentina, Belgium, Brazil, Chile, Cuba, Ecuador, France, Guatemala, Hungary, Japan, Mauritius, Mexico, Norway, Poland, Republic of Korea, Slovakia, Spain, Switzerland, Ukraine, Thailand, UK, USA, and Uruguay.
Hmm.
Those voting against the resolution were Angola, Bahrain, Bangladesh, Cameroon, Djibouti, Gabon, Ghana, Jordan, Malaysia, Maldives, Mauritania, Nigeria, Pakistan, Qatar, Moldova, the Russian Federation, Saudi Arabia, Senegal, and Uganda.
Wow. No surprise there.
Burkina Faso, China, and Zambia abstained on voting.
Really? China?
Yeah. Kyrgyzstan was not present, and Libya is, for some reason, under suspension.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really? My guess is there would have been a no vote.
Yeah, I think so.
When I read it off of Yahoo, the way they, I mean, they didn't break it down as thoroughly as these guys did, but they said you had basically Europe and the U.S.,
Americas.
Yeah, Europe and the Americas voting for,
mm-hmm.
and you had Russia and the Muslim countries voting against.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of Africa.
A lot of
Africa.
Angola, Cameroon, Djibouti, Gabon, Ghana, Nigeria.
Oh, there's a lot of African Muslims.
Senegal and Uganda are mm-hmm. all... the button's not working. Somebody out there, open up the door and let Mary in.
I'll go get it.
Is how all that broke down mm-hmm. on that. And South Africa is not on the Human Rights Camp, the Human Rights Commission to vote on that.
Oh.
But they did propose it.
Oh.
But co-sponsors of the resolution were Albania, Argentina, Australia, Austria, Belgium, Bolivia, Brazil, Canada, Chile, Colombia, Croatia, Cyprus, Czech Republic, and yes, I do hear the Animaniacs running through my head right now as I do this.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering how long that was going to take.
Denmark, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Honduras, Iceland, Ireland, Israel, Italy, Luxembourg, Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Serbia, Slovenia, South Africa, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, Timor-Leste, United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and the United States of America, and Uruguay.
Wow.
Now, Timor-Leste.
Timor-Leste?
Yeah. Which is kind of strange because they used to be part of...
they used to be part of something.
Yeah. Somebody call Amy Goodman. This is where she was attacked. Is it Malaysia or...
I don't know.
It's a highly Muslim area. It's a part of an island that in...
Malaysia.
It's, we know it better as East Timor.
Oh, okay. East Timor.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember. I forget what...
Okay.
I only know that part because that's one of...
Because of Amy.
One of Amy Goodman's claims to fame was being part of... was witness to...
Yeah.
Atrocities there. Let's see.
Okay.
Yeah. Merlin?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting because the pagan float for the parade is going to have, since we're talking about all these countries that are involved in the,
mm-hmm.
where our float is going to be decorated with flags of all of the countries we could find that hold gay pride celebrations.
Oh. Mm.
And they're actual flags. They're not those plastic, like,
Really?
Yeah, they're actual flags.
Right.
Wow. So, it's an idea one of our group came up with, and oddly enough, she's not going to be there the day of the parade.
Oh no!
Because she has some other event that she has to attend, and some family thing or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting idea, and and this is what that reminds me that the idea that we really are gay all over the world,
mm-hmm.
and apparently we can find support all over from places all over the world.
Amazingly so.
Which we might not have 20, 10 years ago.
You're right.
So. Two gay men with developmental disabilities enjoying a trip to a public pool in Hazard, Kentucky, seriously. It was Hazard, Kentucky. Were ejected by a maintenance technician at the facility and told gay people were not allowed to swim there.
What?
Oh, hell no. Oh, by the way, this is a unicorn booty commentary.
Oh.
The two men were guests of Mending Hearts Incorporated, a group receiving Medicaid funding from the Commonwealth of Kentucky. When they entered the pool, they were ridiculed and told that we own this place and we can tell you to leave when we want by the staff of the pavilion, a public pool funded by taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
When pressed for a reason for the ejection, the two men were told that the Bible justifies banning gays from shared public pools.
What?
Kentucky Equality Federation reports the two gay males with developmental and intellectual disabilities were discriminated against by the staff of the pavilion based on their sexual orientation.
Wow.
At a Kentucky KEF, Children of LGBTI Parents Outreach Director, this was an irreprehensible act by the staff. It was humiliating to these young men and their direct support staff. Both men are clients of Mending Hearts, Inc., which provides support for individuals with developmental and intellectual disabilities. Mm-hmm. Mending Hearts is diligent in providing ongoing support for these clients regarding their appropriate behavior within the community, and neither of these young men were exhibiting inappropriate public behavior as witnessed by their direct support staff.
Wow. Wow.
Back to the booty.
Wow.
The pavilion staff should be ashamed of themselves, and we're betting that they will soon, because what they subjected these two men to is completely illegal.
Yeah.
When pressed for a comment, Hazard's mayor stated that all are welcome at the public pool, which really only reiterates how completely screwed the employee and city of Hazard are going to be when this matter makes its way to court shortly.
No.
It's almost as if Kentucky is taking discrimination lessons from Tennessee, with Tennessee's the home of the Don't Say Gay.
Yeah.
You said gay. You shouldn't be saying that.
I'm not in Tennessee.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, this isn't Tennessee.
It's Texas.
Texas.
Mm. Almost as bad.
Less letters.
Ooh.
A little easier to spell.
Yeah. Easier to spell.
Yeah.
T. Harder to deal with someday.
A. Yeah, the smart country folks moved to Tennessee because they can spell Tennessee, and, you know, we keep it short here in Texas.
That's only because they stutter enough to cover all the double N's and E's.
Yeah. I'm going to find a story about the sorry.
Oh, that took my brain in a bad way.
The Safeway story.
Oh.
Oh, I heard about that, but I hadn't read it yet.
Basically, an employee at Safeway kind of gay-bashed a customer, verbally.
Uh-huh. F-bomb faggots.
Oh,
here we go.
Nice.
Yeah, called F and F'ins.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
Jason Morgan and Brandon Harrigan were just trying to get some dinner at Washington, D.C. area Safeway grocery store last Saturday night. Instead of groceries, the two walked away with a heaping serving of homophobia. When these two men unloaded their items onto the belt, their cashier said aloud, "Oh, God, they're faggots." When Morgan asked the woman to repeat herself, she repeated, "You guys are effing faggots."
Woo.
Come on, scroll down. Not so quite safe, after all, at the Safeway. Quoting here, "We just couldn't believe it," he says. "She didn't seem apologetic or anything. We asked her for the store manager, and she just ignored us. So we ended up leaving our groceries where we were and walked away."
Don't blame them.
After the couple asked another cashier to see the store manager, they were directed to the assistant manager, who said she could not help the couple.
What?
Morgan says she gave the couple the store manager's information, who she identified as Michael Bigelow. The couple filed a complaint with the D.C. Office of Human Rights on June 13th regarding the incident. "I've never been called a fag in my entire life," says Harrington. It was absolutely appalling. We were standing there minding our own business, not even talking to one another. Morgan was reading the National Enquirer, and I was putting stuff on the belt, and all of a sudden the checker is saying they're faggots. Well, thank God you weren't reading the Vogue. The incident occurred on the same day as Capitol Pride Parade, during which Harrington was working at JR's, which he described as the busiest day of the year at the bar. Since the incident, the couple has, however, received two calls from people representing Safeway. The first came Sunday from the
Sunday.
From the store's assistant manager, whom they spoke to initially.
Mm-hmm.
The assistant manager called and said, "We are sorry about what happened, and we're still trying to figure out how to handle it."
What?
Back to the booty commentary. how to handle it. Well, you begin with firing the cashier in question, especially since she openly admits to her homophobic behavior in this video filmed by a concerned neighbor of the two men shortly after the ugly incident.
No.
While she does offer an apology, it is lackluster at best. And straight up now, she shouldn't...
It shouldn't
be affecting this Safeway's decision to terminate her immediately.
And if they keep her, they're in deeper trouble.
Actually, the update I saw on another website is she has been fired.
Mm. Woohoo!
For that.
I bet their lawyers said they had to do it.
Putting aside, even for a second, what she said, the fact that she mouthed off to a customer,
depending on which F word you want to fire her for.
Yeah, pick one. I mean,
if you're not going to fire her for calling them a faggot, then you definitely fire her for using the F word.
Yep.
You know,
hello.
At there.
Last time I checked, they don't really appreciate that in most businesses, you know.
I know we can't say it on this air.
Yeah, hello. We can't say it here.
Oh. Sorry, I forgot you walked in there. I turned down that mic. The last little part I have on here is comes from QWERTY, and I know this is something that Jimmy kind of takes to heart.
Oh.
And so I think we'll... Not this concept, not exactly all these words, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But from QWERTY, this is 9 queer terms that need to go.
Oh. Okay, now I'm an older guy, so there are certain words that.
No, you're older.
Yeah. Okay. certain words that have a particularly harsh meaning to me because they have been used in hate during my lifetime. Some of them I have learned to turn around and use myself, even though it gets difficult at times. So go ahead.
Actually, none of them are going to be on those lines.
Oh, really?
These are the concepts they have. There are more of like your distaste for the word hot.
Oh, that. Oh, these my God. Yes, I am so tired of the word hot. It's been used for decades now, and it's just lost its meaning.
Well, here's the the lead up to this. I've been working with words all my adult life, which is longer than I care to say.
Mm.
And I've been a queer person for even longer than that. So I feel fine about appointing myself as a one-person vocabulary task force. I am bored with and occasionally offended by some common gay words and terms, and I want us to get rid of them.
I just love this person.
Strike them from your conversations, blogs, and tweets. Wag your finger at anyone LGBT or other who uses them.
Okay.
And if I've missed one, use the QWERTY comments section to tell me which terms you think we need to be shaken out of the queer argot.
Wow.
This, by the way, is done by Charles Purdy. He's the author of the book The Urban Etiquette, Modern Manners for the Modern Metropolis, and a longtime manners advice columnist.
Oh.
The first word is twink or twinkie.
Mm.
I hate this derogatory term for a young man who is sexually desirable but probably stupid.
Probably.
It manages to be both dismissive and self-loathing.
Mm-hmm.
It might be okay when used to refer to oneself if one is under 25, sexually desirable, and stupid. One of the comments on this one that somebody put was, it's also a little bit racist because when you think twinkie, all you think of is 18-year-old, blonde-haired, blue eyes.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And stupid.
Right.
And stupid.
That's right.
I like to think of it as they've got that German look, and I'm Poland, and feel like it's 1939, and you can invade from the rear. Blitzkrieg, baby.
That is so wrong.
And so many shenanigans.
Yeah, don't worry that you check in the room. You'll get yours in a couple of months afterwards. You know? Actually, y'all just surrendered. We were taken over.
Well, you know, he's right. I am over that word, too.
Fierce.
I'm over twins in general.
Fierce, yes.
This word is played out. It's the fabulous of a new generation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm as guilty as anyone else overusing crutch words like this, but I vow today to start being more exact with my adjectives.
Well, that's just absolutely fabulous,
remember,
darling.
Awesome.
That was so 80s, but fierce.
Yes.
How are we going to what are we going to use now to describe drag queens?
Absolutely fierce.
gay-friendly. The term seems to indicate that gay-unfriendly is an acceptable option. I say no. There should just be a normal human being and a despicable homophobe.
Nice. That's about what it is nowadays, isn't it?
Gay-friendly. It's like you're using that to give them special status when gay-friendly is what everybody should be. Hello.
Thank you for not killing me.
Yeah.
Here's your sticker.
Thank you, IGLTA.
You didn't spit on me. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Here's your gold star. Anyhow.
Drink your juice, Shelby.
The next word is tranning.
Ooh.
Used derogatorily. Adorable Project Runway designer Christian Siriano called something or other a hot tranny mess. And suddenly we were all saying, it's insulting. Stop it. Unless you can own the term.
That's a term of, it's mixed, because there are lots of transgenders who like it and use that term themselves, and others who cannot stand it.
Yeah.
It's like queer, it's like the N-word, it depends, and that's what part we're saying there, unless you can own the term, you know. Breeder.
Oh, I still love that.
Yeah. This term just grosses me out. It makes me think of a farmer inseminating cows.
And that's the point.
Yeah.
Plus, I don't think straight people like it much. It might be okay as an insult if you use it very infrequently or on people who deserve it.
Yeah, have you...
Duckards!
Oh, wow.
Your vagina is not a clown car.
Apparently she thought so.
What?
The Duckards.
18 and counting.
The woman who's got 18 children and now 2 grandchildren.
Oh, my.
And... isn't there a possible bun in the oven again?
I don't know.
That's a frightening thought.
If her if I was her uterus, I would leave.
I'd be filing for a divorce.
I mean, you know, with 18 kids, you know, theoretically, one or two of them has got to be gay. And especially with the groups of twins they have in there.
Oh, wait, have we finished with the funny words?
No, not yet.
No, no. That's just more of the breeders. The next word is fag hag. Misogynic term
awful.
Is often used, this awful misogynistic term that people use carelessly. I guess it's okay if the woman is to refer to herself as one, but I don't see any need to insult our women friends otherwise.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Well, then the other terms you can use is fruit fly.
No.
What's wrong with fruit fly?
I would assume that she's an insect ready to get out the fly swatter for.
What was the other one?
Fat chick.
Oops.
Sorry. I did not mean that. That was a joke.
Wow.
Not,
Jimmy.
Well, the not joke. All straight women who like to hang around gay men are large.
No.
That's not always
you
true.
You just can't see the skinny ones behind them.
No, the skinny ones behind them are their boyfriends cowering from the gay boys.
The next one is anything said with a fake English accent.
Oh,
sweetie darling.
So many of us are still suffering from an intense ab-fab hangover.
Oh, that's where that came from.
And now the dynamic duo is purportedly shooting new episodes. I love the show myself, but sweetie darling. You can no longer say sweetie darling unless you're verifiably English.
The only ones I want to hear saying that are the ones that come to my cash register and are from England. Mm.
Sweetie darling.
That's not so bad.
Oh, darling. Stop it.
It's not like you're demeaning anyone, really.
No. You're pretending to be a very, very old woman.
Being cute. Oh.
Okay.
Who's known for raising her legs very high and
drinking lots of vodka.
And why?
The next phrase is gay marriage. It's just marriage. We want marriage equality, not gay marriage.
Marriage equality, I think same-sex marriage is a better term.
Honestly, I'm like the author. I like marriage equality better.
That's true.
Because same-sex marriage is just like saying gay marriage.
No, it isn't. Because there are a lot of women who do not like the term gay to cover them. They would rather use the term lesbian. And, of course, there's a lot of women who prefer to be called gay women. Mm-hmm. But
screw it. Let's go back to the old term. It's a Boston marriage. That was an old term for a gay relationship.
I know.
The last word on their list is straight acting.
Oh, mm-hmm. I'm here to tell you.
This is another self-loathing term. And it doesn't mean anything, really. I mean, Vin Diesel is straight, but so is Liza Minnelli. Straight acting means having sexual or romantic feelings for the opposite gender. Mm-hmm. Use it that way.
I think that's one term that is so overused nowadays.
That's straight acting.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just like holy crap.
Still out on Vin Diesel, but okay.
The other thing is, it reminds me of ads when it's straight acting. The term straight acting, and the other thing that gets me in a lot of these ads is 55 look 35.
Yes, but is your makeup going to stain my sheets? When you're wearing more pancake than Tammy Faye used to.
Yeah, 55, but friends say I look 35.
My favorites are when they don't post a picture and say, oh, I'm in shape. Yeah, round is a shape, too.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the 55 who looks 35 is looking for 18 to 25.
Oh, I had to give an evil look there with a fat hot comment.
Sorry. The pancake thing is like more pancake than the IHOP special, breakfast special. Oh.
So here's some of the comments that people want to add to this on there. Queer attitude needs to go sanctimoniously telling other queer people what to do.
That's what this show is about.
That's what our slogan is. Get over it. If Twink is on the list, then troll, a lecherous older gay man, needs to go.
Yeah, I don't like that term.
Also, girl, and mangina.
Yeah, that's kind of tacky.
Never been one of my favorite words.
Mangina?
The term partner.
Didn't you hear it from me first?
Probably.
I remember hearing that phrase used by a gay Christian singer.
I'm sorry, it's not called a girl-gina. Why would he call it a mangina? Which still leads me to the punchline about that joke with the girl with her legs up in the air and the flower vase thing.
Oh, yeah.
Anyhow. Never mind.
Top and bottom need to go because they're used mainly for straight jokes.
No, they're mainly used for Craigslist ads. Yep.
See how so many of my fag hags complain about always being the top. Word partner again.
They don't like the word partner?
Yeah. You know, why can't I just say it's my boyfriend or my husband or...
Yeah, because...
Well, because if you're married, then it's your husband.
Yeah, I can understand why they don't like the word partner though, because that kind of makes it could be looked at as like, oh, I can't say boyfriend because society thinks it's wrong. Well, screw society. I mean, if you're going to say boyfriend, then say it.
Well, partner actually is confusing because they could be business partners.
Yeah, exactly. That's confusing also. Yeah,
Chris, you know that term they used to use in all the obituaries.
Dear friend.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's the one that's the name of a movie. Long time companion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't like that one.
Companion.
Either. Companion, really.
Really.
Here's one comment. Whatever. I thought breeder had become a porn term, as in watch Mark Breed chase with his massive 10-inch.
Woohoo! Yeah, that's what they call it.
Well, this show's ending on an interest.
Yeah, that's what they call it in those porn films without condoms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where it's got
those films?
Where he has it leaking out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I call those films? Stupid. Yeah. Is what I call them.
Some people they don't have. Yeah, a lot of them just. Ah, see, someone else here agrees with me. Instead of fag hag, how about fruit fly?
Let me get the fly swatter.
Oh, God. Yeah, but those...
Let's call them Totos, because they hang around friends of Dorothy.
Oh!
He's got a point.
It's like when Merlin was asking if there's a gay midget group out there. I said, yeah, they're probably called something like Under the Rainbow.
Oh, that's funny. Under the Rainbow.
Oh, wow.
Did you slap him?
Do I look suicidal to you?
I guess I'll be politically correct. I never did look it up. Gay little people group.
You could have.
Oh, he's looking it up.
You could have hit him with your walking stick.
Yeah, you know, get the distance.
I like that.
I had a fighting chance.
I'll have to do some more research on it. There's actually an article in the Straight Dope about it. There are many out gay little people.
Really?
Yeah.
No, that would be it.
You know, wow. I have seen quite a few, well, several gay people in wheelchairs out and about. Hmm. You know, either on the streets or in bars or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's very rare that I see a blind person out.
Yeah.
In a gay bar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Would you want to be in a gay bar if you couldn't see?
It would help.
They're falling over people and their beer bottles. It's like
That's what the scene I came is for. If they get in your way, whack.
Hey, I can see, and that's what my stick is for. They get in my way.
Yeah.
Crunch. And I used to know a little person who was a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what her real name was, but her nickname was Sweet and Low. I kid you not.
Oh,
she went by the nickname Sweet and Low.
That ain't right.
No, it's left. Left this building.
Oh. It's left this building.
Oh.
Oh, my.
I will have to work on some research for that for you. And I keep forgetting to look that up online. I've been doing some research of it.
I guess
I haven't found it on those XTube channels yet, so
I guess Mary is already out of fashion, huh?
I don't know how well that was really ever. I mean,
oh, from the time I was a teenager till about 5-10 years ago.
So 100 years.
Jimmy, not to put too fine a point in it, but you still use that word on occasion.
I do. I know very few other people who do.
I'll be quiet, Mary.
Well, we used to
like
know.
Like I said,
I'm going to turn around and say hi, Mary, but that's not Mary.
You used to know somebody who, instead of Mary, used to use Helen all the time.
Oh yes, and he was the only one who I ever knew who.
It's like, what do you think you're going to do with that, Helen?
Yeah, yeah. Instead of Mary, I used to be Mary. When the show first started.
Yes. That's right.
How long ago was that?
That was 1988, 1989,
oh, 1990. God. That was 23 years ago.
That's when Buddy Johnston, the original producer of the show.
Let me age you. That was the year I was born.
How sweet.
And I graduated. I would say bitch slaps all around, but I got to do a PSA on non-violence. So.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, we're at the top of the hour. It's time to head out. We will be here next week
with for
our sweatiest show of the year.
And we will have Jack Valinsky with Jolanda Jones and Jennifer Renee,
who is following us in the Pride Parade. We keep a lookout for us. We were number 70. Yeah, just think of us 69 and staying over.
Yeah.
This is After Hours Queer Radio with Addis. Coming up top of the hour, Zydeco Pasale, followed by the Red Eye Special. If you want to find out what else is going on in KPFT, go over to kpft.org. Let's do our PSAs. Happy Pride Week. See you next week out on the streets.
Aloha. In today's complex world, filled with complicated instructions like do this, turn here, don't staple, fold, spindle, tape, or mutilate, one way, etc., etc., why not take a break from all of this?
Not near a seashore or relaxing in a tropical paradise. Well, the surf's up over at kpft.org. So mouse on over to kpft.org and pledge and renew online. It's easy, uncomplicated, and will give you that warm and fuzzy feeling of having done something good for yourself and your community. So wax that mouse, hang 10, and surf over to kpft.org and renew your membership and pledge online at kpft.org. Thank you for supporting KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace. Mahalo.
One plus one is two. Two plus two is four. And if the yolk's still a little runny, that's what you call fried over easy. Always talk quietly in the library. How you give a Zerbert? Some people have innies, some people have outies. Here's the church, here's the steeple. Open the doors and see all the people.
If you're going to be 2 hours late, pick up the phone and call.
Remember, you're always teaching. Teach carefully. React with rage and kids will learn it's okay to do the same. Keep your cool and kids will do likewise. For a few quick pointers, visit actagainstviolence.org or call 877-ACT-WISE for a free brochure.
Eat ice cream too fast and you'll get a brain freeze.
Brought to you by MetLife Foundation, the American Psychological Association, and the Ad Council.